The hell does Michigan want with Arkansas?
I guess this is the first time we've run into you in a bad mood.
Well, you know, I guess everybody gets that once in a while after so much irritation.
Yeah.
Did something happen the last time we talked?
No, I don't reckon. This is the way it has to be, I guess. Let me tell you one thing before you hang up.
All right.
This is an April Fool's joke on you bastards.
You crotchety old curmudgeon.
I always knew you were, but man, oh man.
Drew and Mike in the Morning. Broadcast program. On the Riff. All day Thursday, your walk right in free station, 101 The Riff, unleashes a ticket blitz Thursday. Keep your radio locked on 101 WRIF all day this Thursday for your chance to hook up with tickets to all of the hottest concerts and events happening around the Motor City. Hooking you up like no other Detroit station can. Listen for your chance to win. Then call the Riff request line at 313-298-WRIF.
Don't forget.
You can always improve your chances to win by joining the Riff Cyber Crew today and score your totally unfair internet advantage. Just log on to WRIF.com. It's Ticket Blitz Thursday on the Riff all day Thursday from your walk right in free station. 101 The Riff. You're listening to WRIF.com.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the Morning.
Bill Clinton proving one more time he'll talk to anybody for a crumb of attention as he talked to us again.
What about Jennifer Flowers? I mean, do you regret lying about her on 60 Minutes?
No, I don't. I don't think so. No.
Well, why not?
Because I wanted to get elected, and I just felt like if the nation's first big exposure to me was hearing about me spanking a big strange ass, yanking on a handful of her blonde hair, or staring at the tattoo on the top of her head, I don't think I would have been elected, and I just felt the battle for the direction of this country was more important.
What tattoo on the top of Jennifer Flowers' head?
It says, let go of my ears, I know what I'm doing.
Surely, that just reminded me. On Oprah, you sounded like you really felt bad for Monica and everything she went through.
Well, as I said, they plunked that monster down in a hotel room, grilled her, then they were going to wire her big old sloppy, ever-expanded and I just felt terrible about that. I mean, that for flashing that quivering planet for an ass at me, that just ain't right.
Drew and Mike in the Morning. Broadcast program. On the Riff. When it's 5 o'clock, it's time to rock with the Riff. Weekday afternoons at 5, right here on 101 WRIF. Your ride home rocks with Big Daddy Arthur P. Playing your Riff Rockin' requests. Call in your Riff Rockin' request to the Grand Poobah at 313-298-WRIF. Email them to arthurp@wrif.com. Hell, you can even fax them in before you ditch the office at 248-398-6219. Call for the tunes that you want to hear. Win yourself some killer Riff swag and let the ride home rock with the Riff's own Big Daddy Arthur Penalo. Riff is the only station letting you pick your favorites and program the station three times a day at noon, 5, and 9. It's your all-request Riff Rock and Ride Home with Big Daddy Arthur P. On the Motor City's one and only, home of rock and roll. 101 WRIF. Riff. This is WRIF.com.
Hello.
How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the Morning.
If I find out there's somebody on this elevator who's not talking back to me, it's going to be your ass.
Beat the hell out of me.
Gentle, doesn't it? 313-298-WRIF. Well, lots going on as usual. The scandal du jour from the ruling politicians in Washington. Oh, by the way, I wanted to thank the people on Motor City Riffs, Jay Hudson, who also is the producer of the Night Call show, and Shafee, who's the host, for announcing the Bands Against Bush concert series 2004 Liberal Palooza. It's going to happen Saturday, September 4th. Five shows, two have already happened, and the lineup for September 4th: Arete, Bruce, Blind Leads Naked, Gutter, Letter Pups, X is for Eyes, and I will be the guest speaker. MC Star is going to be hosting it. It's all going to be Detroit Rock City, the Rock and Roll Toy Store from Hell, 23150 Van Dyke in Warren, Michigan. Anyway, you can go on my website, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E, peterwerbe.com. And I must be doing something right. I'm getting this hate email from all around the country. Oh, it's wonderful. I mean, right on my website, it says, if all you're going to do is scream insults in capital letters, don't bother. Peter has heard it all. Nothing you can say can hurt his feelings. They tried. There's a photograph of me, and you know, people have said, you are so ugly. You are the ugliest human being I have ever seen. And I go, oh, no, you know, they really hurt my feelings. Or I think I've mentioned this one before. Someone says, you have the worst voice I have ever heard on the air. Man, I almost quit after that one. Anyways, if you go to peterwerbe.com and go down on the left side, and there's a Detroit calendar, and that'll take you to all the information about the Liberal Palooza. Actually, I want to be at Radical Palooza or Extreme Palooza. But I'll settle for Liberal Palooza, right? And Jeff Saxon hopefully will be calling in. Actually, I see the line that Jeff may be calling in on to talk about this, and we will find out what happened. The last one, July 31st, Liberal Palooza, got shut down by the Warren cops. And the Warren police that were listening claimed that either me or Jeff said that the Warren police were Nazis. Now, I never said that, and Jeff never said that, but they were harassing him about it. I think they were giving him a hard time about it. Let's see. Dan Letarski is on the phones. Dan, is that Jeff on? Let's see here. This is one of our long-distance callers, but we'll let him sit for a minute. He's got lots of money. All right. One thing I don't want to talk about, I don't want to talk about it. You can talk about it. You can call 313-298-WRIF. You can email me at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. But I'm not going to talk about it other than to say these scumboat liars that have opened up this attack on John Kerry aren't worth the time. But that's exactly what they want to do, because the Republicans know if we talk about the issues, they're going to be overwhelmed because they have messed up. Ooh, I almost said a dirty word. Whew, could have ended my career. They have messed up absolutely everything. Absolutely everything. They have the Midas touch in reverse. But that's always happened to those guys, to Cheney and Bush. No matter how they screw everything up, all their companies and the wars and whatever they've been involved in, it always turns to trash. They're never the ones that pay the cost, either in taxpayer dollars or in human lives of our soldiers or the people that turn out to be the victims of all these misguided policies that these maniacs that have stolen the American government put across. Now, the latest thing, I mean, here, you know, these guys, they don't stop. All of a sudden, former Republican Senator Bob Dole has suggested that John Kerry apologize for past testimony before Congress about alleged atrocities during the Vietnam War. What alleged atrocities? They ever hear of me lie? Come on, there was 3 million civilians killed by the American war machine. Hello? If that's not an atrocity, I don't know what was. I mean, the politicians responsible for that and all the parties deserve to be tried in the world court. 3 million people dead. Not soldiers, not North Vietnamese regulars, not Viet Cong. Hey, people like, what the hell is that? Oh, that's good. I love it when I can't think of these right-wing scums' name. Oliver North and Colin Powell. They were involved in something called Operation Phoenix. Or no, wait a minute. Was Colin Powell? I don't want to say anything for sure. Colin Powell was involved partially in the cover-up of Me Lie. Oliver North was involved in Operation Phoenix that assassinated 20,000 civilians that were involved in the infrastructure of an alternative government that the United States says were communist. Some were communist, some weren't. Some were Buddhist, some were, but whatever. This was this huge war based on a total lie. Puppet government, right? Does this sound familiar at all? Does this sound familiar? I mean, we haven't hit 60,000 American dead, and we haven't hit 3 million dead Iraqis. We're on the way. We're on the way. So Dole now is not only saying that Kerry should apologize for past testimony. That's the damn best thing that John Kerry ever did, as far as I'm concerned. And the other thing is that he says that he that he's joined critics of the Democratic presidential candidate who say he received an exit early exit from combat for superficial wounds. Now, you know, when I first read this stuff about Kerry, making this stuff up about you know, what he did and all that, I thought, eh, you know, who knows? Could be. I mean, it didn't even register for me. I mean, you have the man illegally sitting in the White House who scammed out of the draft because of his rich daddy, who then went AWOL, and some people call it desertion for the amount of time he was gone. You know, no one's talking about that. That's not hitting the papers. That what they say, well, look, the Democrats are doing that. Well, how come that didn't have big, huge headlines? It got a little play a few months ago, but not like this. Not so it's driven every other issue that matters to people off of the news. Now, here is what Todd writes in. Todd writes to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. He says, imagine if supporters of Bill Clinton had tried in 1996 to besmirch the record of his opponent, Bob Dole. This is Dole who's now saying that, that Kerry maybe didn't deserve these medals that he had. I mean, Dole, I mean, go do Viagra ads, hey? After all, Dole was given a Purple Heart for a leg scratch, probably caused, according to one biographer, when a hand grenade thrown by one of his own men bounced off a tree. And while the serious injuries Dole sustained later surely came from German fire, did the episode demonstrate heroism on Dole's part or a reckless move that ended up killing his radio man and endangering the sergeant who dragged Dole off the field? So we start getting into all this crap that poisons political debate. But that's what these conservatives and Republicans are. They're toxic to Democratic debate. And I don't mean, you know, Democratic Party debate, small d. So we're supposed to be able to talk about the issues. What are the issues? Who's more military? I mean, to some extent, Kerry set himself up for this with all this reporting for duty bunk and all that. Because the issues are the war in Iraq. The issues are the sleepiness of the Bush administration and Bush himself allowed 9-1-1 to happen. The economy is in the toilet. On and on and on. We'll talk about some of that. So I don't want to talk about these scumboat liars who are all over the board. Some of them they supported Kerry at one time. Then they changed their story. There was no gunfire. And then the guy who says there was no gunfire, his report that got him his medal says there was gunfire. Who needs all that? What we want to know is what are the real significant issues here? But, you know, it's hard to get there. By the way, if you want to comment on any of this, 313-298-WRIF, calltalkyes@yahoo.com. I mean, there's no depth to which these conservatives and Republicans will go. This is from a website that gets so many hits that I'm not even going to give it. It's a conservative website, but it's, you know, like an insider, just filled with lies usually. But they're really tied into the Republican machine. Bush plans trip to Olympics. Sources tell the site that he may attend Iraqi soccer game, trip being planned in secret, security concerns and disruption of games at issue. Hey, hello, everybody in Europe hates him and hence hates us. Thank you. Another little gift of an illegal presidency. The president will not go if it becomes too much of a distraction. Well, does this guy ever do anything that's not a photo op? Does he ever go anywhere that he doesn't get his picture taken running for re-election? Top source revealed this late Saturday afternoon. Top Bush source cautions planning for trip is being researched and in preliminary stage. Well, you know, the Bush Co. has been doing this re-election campaign ad showing the Iraqi soccer team, who's doing surprisingly well. They didn't, you know, if you lost under Saddam Hussein, you're in bad trouble. Bush's re-election campaign will continue to run a television ad that mentions the Olympics by name despite objections from the U.S. Olympic Committee. The ad shows a swimmer in the flags of Iraq and Afghanistan. In 72, there are 40 democracies in the world today, 120, blah, blah, blah. Bush campaign aides contended the law in question. He says, in Olympics, there will be two more free nations and two fewer terrorist regimes. I mean, he really thinks Afghanistan and Iraq are free nations? You know, this is on planet Bush, out past Uranus, right? Bush campaign aides contend that the law in question, because the Olympic Committee is saying you're breaking the law by mentioning in your campaign ad the fact that you know, connecting this up with the Olympics. Let's see. Oh, yeah. An act of Congress, last revised in 1999, grants the U.S. Olympic Committee exclusive rights to such terms as Olympic derivatives such as Olympiad and the five interlocking rings. It also specifically says the organization, quote, shall be non-political and may not promote the candidacy of an individual seeking public office. Bush, who breaks all laws, that lies about everything, says, the hell with you. We're going to continue to do it. Well, how about this Iraqi soccer team? How about this Iraqi soccer team? Well, they ought to be real pleased that they're getting this notice in the American electoral campaign, that they've been freed from this monstrous dictator. Of course, you know, Bush's dad was one of the people that supported Saddam Hussein back in the 80s. But, you know, that's kind of impolite to mention that. Understand that. Well, here in Patras, Greece, Iraqi midfielder Salah Sadr scored a goal. Afterwards, Sadr had a message for U.S. President George W. Bush, who was using the Iraqi Olympic team in his latest reelection campaign advertisements. In those spots, the flags of Iraq and Afghanistan. At this Olympics, there will be two more free nations. We said that. Here is what Sadr told Sports Illustrated. And it's at SI.com. It's on my website as well. Iraq, as a team, does not want Mr. Bush to use us for the presidential campaign. He can find another way to advertise himself. Ahmed Manajed, who plays as a midfielder on Wednesday, had an even stronger response when asked about Bush's TV advertisement. He said, how will he meet his God, having slaughtered so men and women? Manajed told me, being the Grant Wall, he has committed so many crimes. This is the team that Bushko is using to support the election, not the re-election, because he was never elected, the election of George W. Bush. The Olympic Committee rules, in fact, statute in Congress says you can't do this. Bush says, hell, I'll do what I want. And that's what he's always done. I'll do what I want. Let's see. They also find it offensive that Bush is using Iraq for his own gain when they do not support his administration's actions. Says Iraqi soccer coach Anan Hamad, my problem is not with the American people. They are with what America has done in Iraq. Destroy everything. The American army has killed so many people in Iraq. What is freedom when I go to the National Stadium and there are shootings on the road? Let's see, at a speech in Beaverton, Oregon last Friday, Bush attached himself to the Iraqi soccer team after its opening game upset of Portugal. The image of the Iraqi soccer team playing in this Olympic, it's fantastic, isn't it? It wouldn't have been free if the United States had not acted. But I guess these people don't agree. Sadr, 21, I want the violence in the war to go away from the city. Manajed, 22, who nearly scored his own goal with a driven header on Wednesday, hails from the city of Fallujah. He says coalition forces killed Manajed's cousin, who was fighting as an insurgent, and several of his friends. In fact, Manajed says this is the Iraqi soccer player on the team that Bush is using in his advertisements. Says if he was not playing soccer, he would for sure be fighting as part of the resistance. I mean, this is Planet Bush out past Uranus. Manajed says, I want to defend my home. If a stranger invades America and the people resist, does this mean they are terrorists? Everyone in Fallujah has been labeled a terrorist. There are all lies. Fallujah people are some of the best people in Iraq. Right now, of course, the United States and its puppet government is destroying Najaf. We'll talk about that a little later. All right. Okay. I'll stop a little early. Oh, yeah. Did I mention that? Yeah, I did. I mentioned the concert. Well, let's get our long distance call on first. I believe this is Billy from Santa Cruz, California. Billy, are you with me?
Hello, old friend.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm doing well.
Great.
Yeah. You want me to tell you how much I hate these people? Have I said?
Well, go ahead.
I stole that line. Go ahead.
You know, gosh, I hate them. So let me just quickly say something about Dole. I saw that and I was ashamed for him, and then I thought also of a piece of video I've seen recently where McCain was hugging Bush, and even a hero like McCain, for party loyalty, has to pretend that Bush isn't the biggest creep he ever met. But here's why I called.
Wait a minute, though. But you know, that's like, it reminds me, McCain hugging Bush, it's like Sammy Davis Jr. hugging Nixon. Yeah. I mean, actually, Richard Pryor said, did you see Sammy Davis Jr.? He hugged Nixon. He said, white people don't hug Nixon. Go ahead.
I remember Elvis and Sammy Davis being real excited about Nixon.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Elvis wanted to be a special agent.
Yeah, he wanted to help find those drug users.
Yeah.
Himself, I imagine.
Right. He was going to go after John Lennon, I think.
I had a dream I have to tell you about.
All right, go ahead.
So I see, like, the, you know, it sort of looks like New York, and from windows everywhere there are flags and banners, and the windows are taped, and there's messages, and all over New York people were expressing the fact that how much they disliked Bush.
Yeah.
So then during the convention, I mean, imagine the video. Imagine giving the media something else to look at other than the propaganda. If all the people in New York who don't like Bush were to, you know, make little messages and put them out, you know, it's like a scene out of Network. It really could happen.
Well, I would hope so. There's probably going to be anywhere from 250,000 to 500,000 people protesting at the Republican.
The protesting, you know, they don't let you near. You know, they make you protest in zones. I remember, by the way, when America was a free speech zone, the whole part of America.
Yeah. Well, listen, wait, Billy. If you have 4,000 people, like in Miami or in Boston, a Democratic convention, that's one thing. If you have 500,000 people, it's a little more difficult.
Oh, sure, absolutely. But again, there are just so many great liberals and people in New York, and I just want to, you know. Imagine if they did that. If from all the windows there were these signs, the media would have to take some shots of it, and it would.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be interesting to see all these demonstrations and who actually benefits from it. I think that probably the Republicans are going to portray it as the rabble in the street versus these rock solid guys in blue suits with American flag pins. They did a poll of New Yorkers, and you know what percentage of New Yorkers did not want the Republicans to have their convention literally on the bones of the September 11th victims? 83%.
I was going to say 80% was my guess.
83% of New Yorkers said, Republicans, get out of town. Why the hell did you pick our city?
Absolutely. And it was obvious that, you know, the timing and the place was all for, you know, as you love to say, and I'd love to hear you say, is the, I hit the trifecta.
I haven't said that one in a long time, but I thought you were going to say what I said earlier, that everything is a photo op. Nothing is honest. Nothing is sincere.
Here's a question I have for you.
Go right ahead.
So Bush got this $1 million education in how to fly jets.
Right.
So first of all, he wastes our money there when he refuses to go to Nam and use it. But you know what? You haven't seen a picture of George Bush flying anything ever since then. Something happened to this man.
Wait a minute. He flew onto the USS Lincoln.
He didn't fly the plane.
Oh, yeah. He was...
Yeah. Now, my point is, most people, you can fly into, you know, once you learn to fly, you fly all your life. You love flying. It's a great thing. But somehow, George Bush has never flown again.
That's interesting. Thank you, Billy.
You're welcome, buddy.
Appreciate it from Santa Cruz, California. Lovely little town. It's a nuclear-free town as well. Hi, WRIF. It's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Good evening.
Good evening. There is one place Bush goes where there's no photo app.
Where?
The bathroom.
The ho-ho. Okay, let's not have potty humor.
All right, sorry.
What's up?
Let's talk about the real issues. The real issues is he stole the election. The real issues, he's stealing our standard of living.
Yeah, that's the important one.
The real issue in the military thing,
mm-hmm.
He's a coward, so he transfers his fear, insecurity, and inadequacies upon Kerry. He's also a coward in that he's his new overtime law.
Yeah.
Takes overtime away from police officers and firemen, along with middle management.
Now, what is with these, I don't know what to call them, dopes, that you go into these, I was traveling through Oak Park, a very nice suburb, and I saw about four or five houses in a row, all with Bush Cheney signs. Now, those houses probably were about $120,000. These people couldn't have, unless they were living way below their income in terms of housing. And I'm thinking, they are, involved in cutting their own throats.
I had the opposite experience. I lived for a while in Dearborn, and the heart of Republican Dearborn was always that stretch of Outer Drive,
right,
and Ford Road and Hines Park.
Okay.
And what did I see as I was driving down that stretch?
What?
Cary Edwards, all in front of these big $250,000, $300,000 houses.
Well, I go through Pleasant Ridge, which has those big $250,000 to $500,000 houses, and there you see Cary. So what is this? The middle class and the upper middle class are for Cary, and a section of the working class is for Bush? I mean, can these people be this dumb? I think maybe so, unfortunately. All right, thank you very much for your call. 313-298-WRIF. Call talkyes at yahoo.com. Hi, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Peter.
Hi.
I haven't called since the beginning of the war in Iraq, but you might remember me on that fateful day. I was the vet that was trying to get out but kept crying.
Yeah, right, I do.
Yeah, and remember what I was trying to get out but couldn't find the words for of the hell we were going to walk into?
And it was
getting worse.
It is getting worse.
Four more dead today over in western Iraq, Anbar province.
Well,
we don't even barely go in there anymore. I've heard that.
Yeah, and the same thing is true with Fallujah as well. I mean, we're losing the war there. And in the meantime, tearing up this town. You know, here's what I was putting to people. Who has the legitimacy there? This is an exact reflection of Vietnam. The United States intervened there, set up this puppet government, had the puppet government introduce us. And it was like the United States had some legitimacy to be 10,000 miles a home. Now we have people battling in Najaf. We have on one side the Americans who came there in violation of United Nations resolutions and international law. We established a puppet government, and the people who are opposing us have nothing to do with Saddam Hussein. In fact, the imam that's leading this is his father was killed by Saddam Hussein. So the only person that has authentic legitimacy, although I have no interest or support for his Islamic politics, are the who they call the militants. Which in a soon the militants is a pre-death category. Because you can kill militants.
Mm-hmm.
If you could say, this is the Iraqi resistance. This is the Iraqi resistance. And our men are, and some women are being thrown into this slaughterhouse. In fact, this is Bush's slaughtergate. Bush's slaughtergate for purely political ends.
Have you heard the latest on what's going on there as far as, you know, we keep hearing about the water and the electricity and everything is running?
Yeah, it's a joke.
Have you heard about the Bechtel, that the Army is now repairing what Bechtel charged tons of money for to repair on electrical things going on in Baghdad itself? And the Army is having to go in there and do it because Bechtel never showed up.
Well,
and they took the money and ran.
Well, this is our tax dollars, of which, you know, that the infrastructure here, our police and fire, schools and roads, everything.
Who cares about them? We got to keep the rich people rich.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you for your call.
One more thing, Peter.
Yep.
This may sound weird, but I've been following it for a long time. It was pointed out to me by a friend. You're asking about why people are voting for Bush that come out of those economic zones.
Right.
They're heavily born-again Christian.
Well, you're right. Someone said it's God, gaze, and guns. It's the three G's. And, in fact, in one of these houses, or in front of one of these houses in Oak Park, there was a bumper sticker on a car that said, my boss is a Jewish carpenter. So, obviously, they're willing to take this guy's phony religion and these religious nuts that Bush has brought into the White House and other departments and forget about everything else that makes any difference. All right, thank you very much. Another item here, three U.S. senators and all Democrats have called on Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld to account for $8.8 billion entrusted to the Coalition Provisional Authority. Remember, that was that lameball Bremer. Like, you know, they go by so fast. Paul Bremer, running around in his suits and work boots. It was in Iraq earlier this year, but has now gone missing. The three senators demanded a full written account of the money that was channeled to Iraqi ministries and authorities by the CPA, the Coalition Provisional Authority, which was the governing body in the occupied country till the 30th of June. CPA was terminated at the end of July. Now we've got this puppet government in here. Let's see, the letter the senator said, we are requesting a full written account of the $8.8 billion transferred earlier this year from the CPA to the Iraqi ministries, including the amount each ministry received and the way in which the ministry spent the money. You know what? They're not going to be able to do it because it's gone. It's been looted. $8.8 billion. You know whose money that was? Yours and mine. Whether you support Bush or whether you support Kerry. Of course, if you support Kerry, you're voting against being looted. If you vote for Bush, you are supporting being looted. You are an idiot, then, because you are supporting yourself being robbed. Here's what I suggest to you if you support Bush. No longer lock your car, no longer lock your house when you leave, because you don't mind being looted. You don't mind being robbed. You can walk through the poorest neighborhoods with cash sticking out of your pockets, because you are a mark. You are a sucker. You are a sap. I don't know what got into me today. All right, so wait a minute. They accused, the senators did, the Coalition Provisional Authority of transferring the staggering sum of money with no written rules of guidelines to ensure adequate control over it. Because it's our tax money, and what do they care? Remember we were talking about how these commanders were given tens of thousands of dollars to hand out willy-nilly? In other words, they take our money out of our pockets, and then they go, here, Mr. and Mrs. Iraqi, take the money. Just don't shoot at us. And then they take the money, and then they shoot at the American soldiers there. And the senators pointed to disturbing findings from the Inspector General's report that the payrolls, and so this is, you know, this is the United States Inspector General who tracks all this stuff. These gangsters that run the government and the people and their cronies that they appoint, from the politicians to these big corporations that are all tied into Bush Co., they don't care. You know, they're used to ripping off stockholders, violating pollution laws. So, you know, it's what one of my colleagues in talk radio, Mike Malloy, calls the Bush crime family. And he also says at the end of raves like this, have I told you yet how much I hate these people? And, I mean, it gets worse every single day. All right, here they pointed to disturbing findings from the Inspector General's report that the payrolls of some Iraqi ministries under the CPA control. So Paul Bremer ran this. Remember, everybody thought he was just so cool and everything? They were padded with thousands of ghost employees. They referred to an example in which CPA paid the salaries of 74,000 security guards. Ever wonder why there is so little security in Iraq, even though they're paying so many people, 74,000. Although the actual number of employees could not be validated, the report says in one case some 8,000 guards were listed in a payroll, but only 603 real individuals could be counted. This is not the first time the U.S. financial conduct in Iraq has come under fire, specifically over funds slated for reconstruction. And then it goes on and on and on and on. And in the meantime, we're being robbed, we're being robbed, we're being robbed. And who's the head bandit? Who's at the head of this? Where does the buck and the bucks stop? Think about that. All right, I'm going to think about it, and we'll be right back.
Thank you for tuning in to the Riffs Night Call. Night Call is a public affairs presentation of 101 WRIF Detroit. The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect those of the management or sponsors of WRIF Radio or Greater Media Detroit. Night Call is hosted every Sunday night by Peter Werby. Now stay tuned for more Riff Rock, coming right up on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Citizens of Michigan, now that I've fixed California's problems, let me tell you something. I want to help all of the people get a new car. So if you have a job and $199, Dick Scott Kia in Canton and Dick Scott Kia of Waterford will terminate your past credit problems.
Do you have a job? Do you have $199? Then you could be approved at Dick Scott Kia in Canton and Dick Scott Kia of Waterford. Brand new Kia Rio. Start at just $7,899. That's just $7,899. $1,499. Plus, every new Kia is backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty. Now, you can tell your past credit problems.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Make every mile count only at Dick Scott Kia. Michigan Avenue, a quarter mile west of I-275 in Canton. And Dick Scott Kia of Waterford. At the Summit Place Mall on Elizabeth Lake Road, just west of Telegraph. Call 866-6-KIA now. That's 866-6-KIA-NOW.
To qualify buyers plus tax, title, and plate fees. All rebates to dealer.
Hello, Albany. How's everyone feeling tonight?
Pretty good. I'm kind of sunburned.
All right. Are you ready to rock? Can't hear you! Are you ready to rock?
Rock is a little strong. I am ready to enjoy myself.
Cause once we get going, we are not gonna stop. So you better be ready to go all night!
All night? I need my 8 hours. Yeah, me too.
Rock without enthusiasm. That's like beer without taste. So this summer, join Miller and celebrate 50 years of great rock by choosing the beer with more flavor than Budweiser. Miller Genuine Draft. Genuine flavor, cold-filtered smooth. Miller, good call.
In a nationwide taste test, even Budweiser drinkers said Miller Genuine Draft had more flavor. Testing conducted by the Institute of Perception, Richmond, Virginia. Results reflect which beer has more flavor, not preference or smoothness.
Taste for yourself. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Live responsibly.
At Chrysler, we'd like to salute all the automotive suppliers who've helped build our most amazing lineup of vehicles ever. Whether you manufacture modular door panels or state-of-the-art carbon fiber taillights, you've played an important part in our success. So now through August 31st, your local Chrysler and Jeep superstores would like to salute you and over 600,000 of your automotive supplier colleagues with an extra $1,000 in bonus cash on select Chrysler and Jeep vehicles for a total combined cash allowance of up to $6,000 when financed through Chrysler Financial. You can choose from the new Chrysler Pacifica, PT Cruiser, the trail-rated Jeep Grand Cherokee, and more. We realize all the hard work you put into making Chrysler vehicles some of the best in the world. So talk to your human resources department or contact your dealer to see if you're eligible. If so, we have $1,000 in supplier bonus cash waiting to put toward the Chrysler and Jeep vehicle that you helped us build. But hurry, this offer ends August 31st. So get to your Chrysler and Jeep superstores today. Jeep is a registered trademark of Daimler Chrysler.
Stick around. More Night Call with Peter Werby coming up next.
What keeps satisfied guests coming back to Treetops Resort? Is it because Treetops is home to 81 championship holes of golf created by award-winning designers Tom Fazio, Reese Jones, and Rick Smith? Or because Treetops is rated among the top places to stay by Golf Magazine? Is it because of Treetops' exceptional dining facilities, being pampered in Treetops' renovated spa, or simply just to relax? Whatever the reason, for the months of August and September, Treetops is inviting WRIF listeners to enjoy their magnificent facilities with their stay-and-play package for just $99 per person per night. The package includes one night's lodging and 18 holes of golf with cart the following day. Rates are subject to availability. Treetops is home to the finest golf and recreation facilities in northern Michigan. What are you waiting for? Call Treetops reservation line at 1-888-TREETOPS and ask for the WRIF August-September special. That's 1-888-TREETOPS.
Sports, 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 sports.
What my single-minded friend here is trying to tell you is that when you want to read comprehensive coverage of high school sports, you need look no further than the Oakland Press, Macomb Daily, or the Daily Tribune.
Sports, 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 sports.
We're not just talking high school sports. They cover college and pro sports as well. Their nationally recognized, award-winning sports columnists have over 100 years of experience.
Sports, sports,
and
sports,
news.
Sports. News, 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 news.
Starting with what's most important to you, news in your community. But because our lives are far-reaching, the Oakland Press, Macomb Daily, and Daily Tribune bring you in-depth regional, state, national, and international stories each day. And more.
More?
Business.
Business, business.
From
business,
what's new on Wall Street to what's next in business practices, thought-provoking articles that will keep you up-to-date and ahead of the competition. Call 877-3-READ-US. That's 877-3-READ-US. And get the news that matters to you.
Sports! Sports! Sports!
The Oakland Press, Macomb Daily, and Daily Tribune. My news, my paper.
Take a ride in a Ford. Your suburban Ford dealer ride. Take a ride, ride, ride. Take a ride in a Ford.
The
Ford authorized clearances here. It's the one sales event you don't want to miss. Now's the best time to buy a new Ford car or truck with 0% financing or cash back as high as $6,000. That's up to $6,000 cash back on Explorer 4-door, $6,000 on Freestar, up to $5,000 on Expedition and Taurus, up to $4,500 on selected Ford F-Series, and $3,000 back on Ford Focus. This is the one event you can't afford to miss. The Ford authorized clearance. Not all buyers will qualify for lowest APR. See dealer to see if you qualify. To be eligible for APR rate or cash incentives, you must finance through Ford Credit. Residency restrictions apply. Take new retail delivery from dealer stock by 8/31/04. See your Suburban Ford dealers for complete details. See friendly Ford Monroe, Zot Ford Holly. Open Saturdays.
Take a ride in a Ford.
See Brighton Ford Brighton, Gene Butman Ford Ypsilanti.
101 WRIF Detroit. Call in with your comments at 313-298-WRIF. Now, Night Call returns. Here's Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much. And just tons of emails coming into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. No way in the world can I read them all on the air. I definitely will read them all. Shorter is better, and you got a better chance of getting them read on the air. Stephen from Dearborn Heights says, with all this BS about the Swift boat controversy grabbing the headlines, I didn't even know this. I mean, see, this is you folks are so smart. Remember I was saying the ditto heads that listen to these right-wing disinformation guys? They, you know, they don't have anything to offer. The host is smarter. You know, these hosts, these right-wing hosts are always bragging about how smart they are and brains on loan. What did they say? Brains on loan, brains on loan from God or something like that. And they are smarter than their callers. They're dumb. You know, it's one of the things Mark Twain said, consider the intelligence of the average man and then realize 50% are even stupider. Well, that's the conservatives. The conservative host is probably right in the middle, and then all the rest are, you know, on the dumber side. Whereas with you folks, I learn stuff all the time from you. It's half the stuff on my website, peterwerby.com, is stuff you've sent me. A lot of my information comes from you. I couldn't do it without you, and sometimes you correct me. Remember, I was saying last week, you never hear any of these right-wingers ever say, you know, I made a mistake last week. And they make just so many factual errors, it's astounding. Anyways, Stephen from Dearborn Heights writes, while all this BS about the Swift boat controversy is grabbing the headlines, 26 U.S. soldiers were killed this week in Iraq, and hardly a mention of it was in the news. This is exactly what Bush wants, more smoke and mirrors to deflect from his failures in his life, and I would add, in his administration. Well, I couldn't, I just couldn't say it any better myself. And what I was talking about before the break is that you have this tremendous amount of money that either has been looted by official means, that is this war that didn't have to be, that was brought about by lies and mis and disinformation, and now it's being reconstructed by and the weapons of war paid for by us, and all this money goes to Bush's buddies in the war machine, the war industry machine, and then after they destroy everything, then his buddies get paid to build it up with our tax dollars, but they don't want to just settle for getting paid for work. They overcharge. All this money goes missing. I mean, are there Republicans out there that really think this is okay? I mean, look, U.S. public now evenly split on Iraq war. Do you realize that there's 50% of the people in this country that actually think there was some justification for this morass, for this monstrous act of lies that now has American troops killing and being killed for George W. Bush's, hey, the nicest thing you can say is mistakes. Here, this is what the article says. I'll just... real quickly, 9 months of chaos and casualties in Iraq since Saddam Hussein's capture have taken a heavy toll on American opinion of Bush's decision to go to war. It once was 2-1 when Saddam was caught. Now the public is evenly divided. Older people, minorities, people with lower incomes, residents of the Northeast, and Catholics are among those increasingly skeptical of the war. These shifts in public sentiment reflect the difficulties in Iraq, including a death toll nearing 1,000 U.S. soldiers, the violent insurgency against the new Iraqi government and U.S. forces, and the failures to find weapons of mass destruction, which was among the central justification for Bush's decision to go to war. It wasn't among them. It was the central. We were under attack. Both Democrats and independents lost enthusiasm for the war during the period since Saddam was captured. Almost 9 in 10 Republicans still say it was the right thing to do. This is why I, you know, we were talking, remember, could you be friends with a Republican? And I said, no, I couldn't be friends with them. I'm friendly. I know Republicans. And I say, hey, man, how you doing? You been watching the Olympics? Great. Pretty cool, huh? See those swimmers? And then goodbye. But 90% of Republicans still say that the invasion was the correct thing to do. They're saying this solely because of political reasons. They don't care that the kids from Kansas and Ohio and Michigan and what have you are going to be living the rest of their lives without arms or eyes. They don't care that 1,000 American soldiers, oh, they, you know, they'll whip, we, you know, weep these crocodile tears about our brave men in uniform and all that crapperoo. But what they don't want to admit that George W. Bush made an error so egregious that it'll probably go down in history with, I don't even know what, with the war in Vietnam, probably. And Bush, I'm sure, will surpass Ronald Reagan as having the most corrupt and the worst administration in American history. Now, 60% of Americans think Bush does not have a clear plan for bringing the Iraq situation to a successful solution. He has no clear plan at all. He has no plan at all. 40% of the people actually think he has a clear plan. This is absolutely insane. Well, ultimately, here's why we are in the mess that we are in. You know, I kind of knew this, but like I say, I'm just kind of an average kind of, I'm like, you know, so consider the intelligence of the average man. Me too. Yeah, I just work hard at it, read a lot, and what have you. There's a new book out called The Great Divide, Retro versus Metro America. The Great Divide, Retro versus Metro America. And we wonder, how did these far right-wing conservatives wind up controlling the government of the United States? Well, it's all just even in this advertisement in here. Remember, they had the red states and the blue states. The red states were the ones that went for Bush. The blue states were the ones that went for Gore. Here's where the red states are. The South, the Great Plains, the Mountain West, and Appalachia. Right? The blue states are the Northeast Coast, the West Coast, and the Great Lakes states. That's us. The red states, which put Bush in the White House, forgetting about whether he's, and I can't, but let's for a second forget about that the election was stolen. But let's say that it was all on the up and up. Those states that sent Bush to the White House represent, and I know the Supreme Court did, but anyway, represent 35% of the population and have 50% of the senators. The blue states, including our states, have 65% of the population and send 50 senators. Here's what they make their money on. Subsidized extraction industries like agriculture, oil, gas, coal, and forestry, and a majority of the military installations. Now, you know, understand that? What their industries aren't self-sufficient. So we pay, you and me, we pay like tobacco and the oil company, and the oil companies, gas companies, coal, forestry, and all that. Forestry department builds roads. They destroy natural habitat so these logging companies can go in areas where they never could go with their own dime to clear-cut natural heritage of the planet. And we pay for that. The red states, the Bush states, the South, the Great Plains, the Mountain West, and Appalachia pay 29% of the federal taxes. They represent 35% of the population. They pay 29% of the federal taxes. We pay 71% of the federal taxes. Well, it's close to being appropriate. I mean, you know, 6% here or there. In 10 years, from 1991 to 2001, those red states, the Bush states, pardon me, received $800 billion more in goods and services and cash from Washington than it paid in taxes. They paid 29% of federal taxes, got back a surplus of $800 billion. How about this? Our states, like Michigan, from 1991 to 2001, paid $1.4 trillion more in taxes than it got back in goods, services, and cash. So we lost. This is more an example of looting. You got to really think about that. I mean, if you're getting bum wages, you don't think about, I don't get paid very well. You're being looted. The time of your life spent involved in producing wealth for other people. So your labor is being looted. Here, this is a big loot fest. Then it goes on to some other things. Nobel laureates in science and economics coming out of the South, the Great Plains, the Mountain West, and Appalachia, 23. Coming out of the Northeast Coast, the West Coast, and the Great Lakes states, Nobel laureates in science and economics, 235. Well, that's what it's all about. That's what it's all about. And the gap between the haves and the have-nots are expanding and have expanded exponentially under Bush. So you're being looted. You're being looted. That's the word. And if you're supporting Bush, you're saying, take my money. And I tell you, why lock your house? Why not just leave your money where anybody can grab it? That's essentially what you're doing. All right, I'm Peter Werby, 313-298-WRIF. Let's go to Jeff Saxon. Jeff Saxon is the impresario putting on Liberal Palooza. He's putting on put on two concerts already. He's got another one coming up September 4th. Jeff, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Hey, Peter, nice to talk to you.
Well, last we left you, July 31st, the Warren Police, who neither of us called Nazis.
Let's get that clear.
Why do they say that? I don't understand that.
I don't know. They came to my back door a couple of days after that, and first thing they said to me is, are you the one who called us a Nazi on Peter Werby?
And you said, you probably...
I said, no, I might have said stormtroop, because there was like eight cop cars out there in the parking lot in the small, tight little area.
Okay, so anyways, wasn't me. All right, so we got another show coming up Saturday, September 4th. I'm going to be the guest speaker.
And we still got to get your website updated about that, Peter.
What do you mean?
I was just at your website. I couldn't find anything about it.
Oh, well, you got to go to Detroit Calendar.
Ah.
Okay, I was going to put that out right on the front page anyway. Detroit Calendar is where to go.
Well, we got five great bands this time. One of them just off of the Renaissance tour, Gutter Pups. They're very unusual. You got to check them out. They're like a rock band from the 16th century.
Really?
Yeah. Violin. They got a violin. They got a flute player, guitars, bass, and drums. They're like Dream Theater out of the Middle Ages.
Wow. I was going to say, I was going to actually give some of the people proviso that if like your favorite bands are like Crosby, Stills, and Nash, maybe this wouldn't be the concert for you, but what do you think?
No, I would definitely say that, because, Arte, Bruce, and Blind Leads Naked, and X's for Eyes, they're all more mainstream punk rock, alternative hard rock.
So am I going to be the oldest guy there? Well, somebody has to be.
Well, somebody has to.
It's an honor. Now it's not, you're not old, you're an elder. I'll be there.
Well, we had some elderly rock stars at the last show, and we had a great time until the cops ended it abruptly.
Well, listen, they're probably listening. A lot of Warren Police listen. So let's call them the Warren Police, who, and there will be no laws broken, at least when I'm there. I don't want to wind up in the Warren City Jail with you, Jeff.
This time, instead of a gathering of adults talking about politics and rock and roll, drinking beer out of a keg, this time there will be no keg, it's BYOB. And that's legal, according to the Warren Police.
Well, check it out.
That's checked out. I've got their approval to have a BYOB party.
Okay, so where can we, you can go to DetroitRockCity.org.
Anyone but Bush2004.us.
All right. And you go to Peter Werby, W-E-R-B-E, peterwerby.com. Yeah, that's right. And go to, on the left side, it'll say Detroit Calendar, and you can see it all there. All right. I thought I was going to be going to the Republican convention for the protests next week, but I may have to cancel that. So we may get you on again to give us an update.
Well, that sounds good. Can I comment on this? Well, people are talking about gays and guns.
God's gays and guns. Yeah, why nitwits would vote for Bush, right? What? Tell me.
For each thing, okay. For God, okay, reduce this war to two people, the American guy and the Iraqi guy. Would a good Christian beat the crap out of the other guy just because he wouldn't cooperate?
No. All right. What about gays?
Gays. I mean, I'm a Christian. I'm a Catholic. But do you really trust your church when they're molesting children all across the country?
All right, guns.
Guns. You're dealing between two people, George Bush and John Kerry. One fired a gun at the enemy in battle.
Mm-hmm.
The other one was drinking in a bar in Alabama.
Well, there you go. All right, Jeff Saxon, thanks a lot. We'll get you on the air next week as well, all right?
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot. Remember, Liberapalooza, Saturday, September 4th. Detroit Rock City is the place, the rock and roll toy store from hell. 23150 Van Dyke in wonderful Warren, where we love the police. We don't think they're stormtroopers. Actually, I'm just saying that so they don't bust me. They're probably plotting that right now, right? I'm coming with my lawyers. I'll be there. I'm not going to be the oldest guy there. My lawyer is going to be the oldest guy there, right? Okay, let's continue on. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Thanks for waiting, by the way.
Yeah. Hey, for that guy that just talked to you, he was, hey, it's best to be the youngest of the old, if you know what I'm saying.
There you go.
I was just calling to say that, you know, I voted for Bush last time, and I've come to realize, you know, later, the more things go on, that I've never been so, like, frustrated and, like, uncomfortable with my financial, like, situation. It's really, it's killing me, you know, it's bothering me a lot, and I'm not entirely comfortable with either Bush or Cheney. I, you know, Nader, I don't know what that deal is with Nader, but I'm willing to give my vote to Nader.
Well, I think, I mean, I hate to say it because my Nader friends will probably go crazy. But with all the flaws that Kerry says, or has rather, that this essentially is a referendum on Bush. And if you want to see four more years of giveaways to the rich, the middle class...
Nobody wants to see that.
Well, then there's only one choice. I mean,
Kerry, he scares the hell out of a lot of people I've talked to.
I can't imagine why he scares them. But here's what I say. I am voting against Bush. That's what I'm going to do. I want to do everything in my power.
That's why Nader is the man.
Okay. Let's leave it as a vote for Nader. All right. Thank you very much. WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Pete. This is Scott from Detroit.
Hi, Scott.
Well, I got three things. First of all, I wanted to say spot on, old chap, for trashing the right. It's fun to finally hear somebody rip them up for a change.
Oh, I've been doing it for a while.
Oh, well, keep doing it because there's hardly nobody else doing it. And two, actually, I think I could top your hate for the right because I hate conservatives far more, I think, than you do because I actually, instead of arguing with them, I'd rather just shoot it out with them. Because that seems to be where it's going to finally end up happening around this country eventually. I mean, because I have a pet theory that if the conservatives are able to stay in power long enough, you know, maybe too long, eventually it's going to turn into, people are going to get tired of talking, it's going to turn into a shooting war.
Well,
they'll just have it out.
Well, I sure hope that isn't the case. And I actually don't suspect it will. But this whole acrimony that has swept our country has really been manufactured by the right, by the right-wing politicians, right-wing talk show hosts, Foxhole News, all of those entities that are this really small minority but have the capacity because of their wealth and who speak for wealth yet can manipulate people because of their fears and their prejudices. They've able to thrust themselves into positions of political control. I mean, they weren't successful in 2000. The majority of American people did not want George W. Bush to be president. The majority voted against him. And my prediction is the majority will vote against him again. The real fear that I have is that when John Kerry when he wins the election on November 2nd, that's going to be the danger point between November 2nd and January 20th, whether there, in fact, will be an orderly transition of government. And people say, oh, that's crazy. You know, this never happened. This is not some South American country. This is the United States of America. Well, I hope that's correct. Thank you.
This is the Riffs Award-winning Night Call with Peter Werby. Peter will return with more Night Call in just a moment.
Hey, friends, this is Meltdown, and my boy Joe Pannion is no ordinary Joe. Wondering what the hell I'm talking about? Well, I'm talking about trucks you have to see to believe. Not just ordinary Chevys. These are total customized rigs. If you love trucks like I do, you got to see them to appreciate them. No other dealer in town does it like Joe Pannion. Stop by and check them out for yourself. You drive by the place all the time. Telegraph at 696 in Southfield. They've got trucks right in the showroom. Custom grills, chrome wheels, hot U.S. Speedo dash packages, rumbling custom exhaust, all on the floor of the Joe Pannion showroom. Avalanches, Silverados, Suburbans, Tahoes. And hey, I'll tell you what, before you buy anything, bring a quote in from any Chevy dealer and tell Joe Pannion that Meltdown says to beat it, and they will. 696 and Telegraph in Southfield, 1-800-JOE-1111. Once you shop Joe Pannion's trucks, you won't go anywhere else. Chevrolet, an American revolution.
My name is Nick Bristow, and I think outside the bun.
Nick Bristow thinks outside the bun.
I can't live chained to one measly state. I was born to roam.
Nick sold everything he owned that didn't fit into his car.
Now I'm prepared to go whenever the urge strikes me. Like last night, I went to the kitchen for a glass of water and ended up moving to Minnesota.
Nick is always on the go. That's why he enjoys Taco Bell's chicken quesadilla. It's filled with new grilled and marinated all-white meat chicken, a blend of cheeses, and then sealed in a flour tortilla. It's a quesadilla that's as ready to move as you are.
I feel the need to explore coursing through my veins.
Keep on trucking, Nick. Road warriors stay on the go with Taco Bell's chicken quesadilla because they think outside the bun. At participating locations, white meat chicken available in U.S. only.
Craving a taste for late night excitement? Taco Bell is open late so you can feed your need for all the spicy, melty, crunchy stuff you crave. Spice up the night. Think outside the bun. Open till 2 a.m. or later. Hours may vary by location.
They call Doug the Rocket, because when you need something done fast, Doug is who you call.
Righto!
But if he actually is rocket-powered, then he should enjoy this refreshing cup of high-grade rocket fuel.
What, are you nuts?
Guess Doug's no rocket man after all. But with the new i710 phone from Nextel, he has all the power he needs. It's GPS-enabled with speakerphone for hands-free conferencing and a built-in walkie-talkie that connects coast-to-coast in under a second. So things don't just get done fast. They get done instantly.
Mouthwash pronto.
The rocket-powered i710 from Nextel. Just $99.99 after $25 mail-in rebate. Sign up now and find out how to get 10,000 minutes a month, long distance included. Call 800-NEXTEL-9, go to Nextel.com, or visit a store near you. Nextel. Done.
Offer ends August 31st, 2004. 1 or 2 year service agreement required. $200 early termination. Account setup fees, taxes, charges, and other restrictions apply. Phones and rebate by Motorola. Legal disclaimer done.
More Night Call with Peter Worthy. Next on The Rim.
What keeps satisfied guests coming back to Treetops Resort? Is it because Treetops is home to 81 championship holes of golf created by award-winning designers Tom Fazio, Reese Jones, and Rick Smith? Or because Treetops is rated among the top places to stay by Golf Magazine? Is it because of Treetops' exceptional dining facilities, being pampered in Treetops' renovated spa, or simply just to relax? Whatever the reason, for the months of August and September, Treetops is inviting WRIF listeners to enjoy their magnificent facilities with their stay-and-play package for just $99 per person per night. The package includes one night's lodging and 18 holes of golf with cart the following day. Rates are subject to availability. Treetops is home to the finest golf and recreation facilities in northern Michigan. What are you waiting for? Call Treetops reservation line at 1-888-TREETOPS and ask for the WRIF August-September special. That's 1-888-TREETOPS.
Citizens of Michigan, now that I've fixed California's problems,
let me tell you something. I want to help all of the people get a new car. So if you have a job and $199, Dick Scott Kia in Canton and Dick Scott Kia of Waterford will terminate your past credit problems.
Do you have a job? Do you have $199? Then you could be approved at Dick Scott Kia in Canton and Dick Scott Kia of Waterford. Brand new Kia Rio. Start at just $7,899. That's just $7,899. Plus, every new Kia is backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty. Now, you can tell your past credit problems.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Make every mile count only at Dick Scott Kia. Michigan Avenue, a quarter mile west of I-275 in Canton. And Dick Scott Kia of Waterford. At the Summit Place Mall on Elizabeth Lake Road, just west of Telegraph. Call 866-6-KIA now.
That's 866-6-KIA-NOW.
Qualified buyers plus tax, title, and plate fees. All rebates to dealer.
Have you felt the power of music? The magnificent sound of a symphony? The perfectly played notes that send shivers down your spine? This is the power of music. And you will feel it at the DSO. Join us and share in an amazing evening of music as conductor Neme Yerby opens the season with Orff's rousing masterpiece, Carmina Burana. be there for this moving and memorable performance as our maestro kicks off his final season with the Detroit Symphony Orchestra. It's Carmina Burana, Thursday through Sunday, September 9th through the 12th. Feel it, the power of the DSO at the Max. For tickets, call 313-576-5111. That's 313-576-5111. Or visit DetroitSymphony.com.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
Get your clubs ready and head out to Treetops Resort. Treetops, located in Gaylord, Michigan, is home to the number one par 3 course in the U.S. Treetops is proud to be rated the top golf course to play by Golf Magazine, as well as being recognized as being a silver medal award winner. Also ranked by USA Today as the top 10 places to take dad, this is certainly a place where you need to be. There are four unforgettable courses, three of them designed by top-notch golfers. So call now and...
Mother. They concentrate the wealth and they disregard the squalor. I hate Republicans. I hate Republicans. Baby, I can't stand those Republicans. I hate the old Republican Party.
As available on my website, peterwerbe.com, PETERWERBE.com, and that's the Happy Tones. We've played that before. All right, we're talking about how the scumboat liars are trying to divert us from talking about the issues, and they've been pretty successful. Of course, the media cooperates. I mean, who wants to talk about health care? Who wants to talk about the fact that 9 million Americans under George Bush have lost health care? Who wants to talk about the fact that the rising cost of health care benefits are cited as a factor in slump of jobs? That's what's going to affect all of us. Here, a relentless rise in the cost of employee health insurance has become a significant factor in the employment slump as the labor market adds only a trickle of new jobs each month, despite 3 years of uninterrupted economic growth. What they mean is corporate profit. So the rich have been doing fine, middle class, working class, poor, screwed. Right? Looted, essentially. We've been talking about that earlier. Sungwon Son, chief economist at Wells Fargo, says healthcare is the major reason why employment growth has been so sluggish. So get ready. They're going to take away our healthcare. They're going to make us pay more. They're going to completely take it away in some cases. They're going to take it away from retirees. All of this in the wealthiest country in the world and the only industrialized country in the entire world that doesn't have a state-financed health care system. You know why? Because $8.8 billion has been lost in the laundry under the Paul Bremer Coalition Provisional Authority, right? I mean, among other things. Or the way Halliburton's looted us. Or the way Bechtel, all of this, Bush's buddies. All right, who are people are voting for? I say it's a referendum on whether we want to be continue in these wars, be looted, have the environment go to hell, safety. You know, they just passed this, I think I said that last week, this guy who was a lobbyist for the mines who wanted to reverse some of these health standards in the mines, how much coal dust could be released. He asked Clinton to do it. Clinton says, you're crazy. Get out of here. He's now head of mine safety and just installed these rules. So the miners are going to be sucking more coal dust. So how anyone that isn't making over $200,000 a year votes for Bush is so far beyond me. And how anyone making over $200,000 and votes for Bush and doesn't have a conscience is way beyond me as well. Glenn, here's what, and we said some of it was, what was it, God, gays, and guns, right? Glenn writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com, I'm a responsible hunter and a target shooter. I will not vote for some jerk who has a perfect record of voting to take my constitutional rights away and my capability to defend myself. This is why John Kerry will not get my vote. On the other hand, I won't vote for a thieving war criminal either, so Bush is out. I'm so mad I'm voting libertarians. Politicians sure do suck, don't they? Well, I'd agree with that, Glenn, although I don't know how Kerry has voted to against your constitutional rights. I mean, you support some gun control, don't you? Everybody does. I mean, you think people should have bazookas, fully automatic weapons of war and all that? I mean, I don't think that's a good idea. Robert from Port Huron, Michigan, writes in that, let me see, the long and the short of this is this fear is that Fidel Castro is going to be the October surprise. That's who will be invaded by the U.S. Paul, listening in Boston, writes in that Walt Disney's Miramax Film Company, the ones who originally wanted to distribute Fahrenheit 9/11, had to lay off 65 of 485 workers to cut costs. Meanwhile, Fahrenheit 9/11 has made domestic $115 million and internationally $118 million. Justice is well served. And here, just one final thing, shows you where the economy's at. In Los Angeles, Longshore Union and port shipping officials sifted through. I won't tell you, they're the people applying for a special lottery for 3,000 temporary dock worker jobs. 3,000 temporary dock worker jobs. You know how many applicants they had? Can you take any guess? 1 million? No. You're close. 300,000 people applied. You know what that tells you? People have bad jobs. 300,000 people applied for 3,000 temporary dock worker jobs. They're good paying. You know why? Because they're union jobs. All right. Continuing onward, we haven't made much forward progress. Thank you for your patience. Hi, WRIF, you're on the air. Good evening.
Yes, good evening, Peter.
Hi.
This is what I'd like to say concerning Kerry's former buddies there over there in Vietnam. Now, what I don't understand about this, Peter, is if Kerry was what everything these guys claim that he was, and he was over there in Vietnam killing people or whatever they claim he did, why in the hell, when they found out this guy was going to run for political office, why didn't they chop his ass up then?
Well, there has been one guy who has been on Kerry's case since 1971. It's been his, like, jihad against Kerry because he was mad because Kerry testified before Congress and told some truth to the American people and to Congress. But these other guys, in what I call these scum vote vets for lies or whatever, was that some of them, they changed their stories. And some of them changed their stories about Kerry. Some of them changed their stories about what had happened when we were there. I'm sorry, when they were there. But it's like I said, it's this big diversion, so we don't have to talk about the issues.
Because what they've done now, they've just let this guy that they claim is no good. How long has he been in political office now, about 10, 12 years?
No, more than that. I mean, yeah.
Okay. Now, Peter, also, when I was living in Minnesota, I seen a similar thing like this back in the 90s in Minnesota's governor's race. Of course, it was two Republicans. It was a guy named Grunsep that was running against an Arne Carlson.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened just before the election, about a month before the election, two young women, they were teenagers, earlier came up with a story that this guy Grunsep was skinny dipping in his swimming pool with them about 10, 12 years earlier. They were teenagers outside of St. Paul there in a little suburb. Anyway, when the election came, Grunsep ended up losing.
Well, how about this? 1988, Michael Dukakis, the Willie Horton ad.
Yeah.
This racist piece of crap put together by the same people involved in this Kerry attack. And the same people that that did this number on John McCain, too. I don't know. I can't believe that McCain actually hugged George Bush. There's no limit to the depth these people will sink to. It's the dirtiest politics since, like, probably the 19th century.
Yeah, you're right, Peter. Okay, that's what I wanted to say. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. I appreciate it. 313-298-WRIF. It's Night Call, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Peter, I'd just like to say, first of all, you're a genius. All right. And second of all, my friend Bob Richards wants to say that you're a genius. Well, because he's sitting in the other room.
Okay.
First of all, this whole freedom of speech thing, it just really gets me because, I don't know, first of all, there's this shirt that I saw at Southland Mall in Taylor. It had a picture of George Bush, and it said, "A village in Texas is missing an idiot."
A village in Texas is missing an idiot, yeah.
Yeah, and I guess for some reason he's protesting this shirt. I can see why, but then also, it's freedom of speech, first of all, so we should be able to wear a shirt.
Sure. Yeah, why not?
Yeah, I mean, why protest something that goes against you? I mean, you're supposed to be the president. You're supposed to be for us, and you're saying that we can't wear a shirt, you know?
Well, this is, you know, this has been standard procedure, is that, you know, I was listening to some historic clips, and Harry Truman, remember, was the president in the late 40s and early 50s, and he was speaking, and when after he would say something, you could hear about three-quarters of the crowd would cheer, and about a quarter of the crowd would boo. They would, you know, they go, boo. I don't know. How do you do that? Boo. I don't know. They used to do that. I don't think people boo anymore. Anyway, so what it meant, about 25% of the people listening were Republicans, people that supported the Republican candidate for president. No problem. It was called, like, you know, someone said earlier, free speech. Now, if you try to have a demonstration, the cops try to herd you off so you can't be seen by the press or can't be seen by the president. And it's, you know, it's getting to be like a little dictatorship. Yeah. All right, thank you very much. In fact, this happened up in Traverse City. This is from the Traverse City Record Eagle. Kathy Mead wanted to see her first sitting president when George W. Bush visited the city. Instead, Bush campaign staffers tore up the 55-year-old social studies teacher's ticket and refused her admission because she sported a small sticker on her blouse that supported Kerry and Edwards. She said, "I had my ticket and photo identification, but they would not let me in because of this sticker," who said she'd seen Queen Elizabeth and Pope John Paul in person. "I've never found this kind of screening anywhere in my travels around the world. I can't imagine being denied access to hearing the President of the United States speak." Well, you can in Bush's America, on planet Bush, out past Uranus. Let's see. Several people outside tried to console me, who was visibly upset. And but Ralph Suffredine, a Traverse City commissioner, school board member, and former police chief who worked security at the front gate, said it's part of the Bush campaign policy. "We were told that anyone with stickers or shirts would not be let in if they would not take them off." Mead, the person who was denied, came to me after her ticket was torn up, but I told her there was nothing I could do. "I know her, and it was really too bad, but I would say that we had very few instances of that." And this is typical of other Bush rallies, that only Republican supporters get to see the president. Does this sound sort of familiar? Here we have Bush talking about how wonderful we have two new democracies in America, Iraq and Afghanistan, which is a terrible, terrible joke, both being run by puppet governments that if they left would be gone in a minute, would be gone in a minute. It's like the South Vietnamese. And this is worth reading again, although I did this early in the hour. Bush has been showing these Iraq soccer team ads and talking about the Olympics, even though this is forbidden. Talking about that is forbidden by U.S. law that says that it should be non-political, may not promote the candidacy of an individual seeking public office. Bush says, "I don't care about that." But here is what one of the midfielders for the Iraqi soccer team says. "How will Bush meet his God, having slaughtered so many men and women? He has committed so many crimes." You want to see this whole story? It's on my website, peterwerby.com. All right, we're going to line three. Thank you. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Peter. How you doing, bud?
Doing good.
First of all, just wanted to say that I'm not a Republican, but I'm not voting for Bush either. But the whole Fallujah and not job situation,
yeah,
is really upsets me that, you know, people think that, you know, these are freedom fighters. To me, like, I mean, I've read things, and I wish I could cite the source that said that more than half of the ones in Fallujah are Iranians, and that Iran is sending people all the time to help disrupt the process. I mean, if Sadr was a smart guy, which he's not, he's a thug. I mean, he would do this whole differently.
Why is he a thug? I mean, this is exactly, and as I said before, this guy is an Islamic fundamentalist. I don't like fundamentalists of any religion, Christian, Hindu, Islamic. They all cause trouble. But he is the son of one of the most prominent and martyred imams that was killed by Saddam Hussein. You know, what do you think the British said about George Washington and Lighthouse Harry Lee and the rest of them? Terrorists, thugs, rebels, militants.
Can I rebut about Sadr?
What's that?
Can I rebut about Sadr?
Sure.
He was wanted for killing another cleric who opposed him.
You know, this, he claims it wasn't true. Hey, you have this government, ours, that invaded this country under false pretenses and violating international law. It set up this completely puppet government made up of exiles, many like the President Alawi, who hadn't been in the country in 20 years. Their main star, of course, Chalabi, turned out to be a crook of the first order and one of the guys that gave all the bad information about weapons of mass destruction. Sadr has more legitimacy than the Alawi government or certainly the United States troops that are there. And the United States troops are there, as I said earlier in the last hour, killing and being killed for purely political reasons to get Bush through this election.
But in the beginning, he was like basically, you know, I know that, you know, invading army, the whole, you know, way that goes. I understand that a lot of people don't want us there, okay?
Right.
But you're not going to win using violence. He's trumpeted so much violence, and by the way, going in the most holy site, and you know, supposedly Shiite, the holiest Shiite site, you know, in holding up there is asking for bullets on that building. It's asking for, you know, bring the war right where you don't want it, and then blaming us like we're the bad guys because we're shooting near it. You know, it really upsets me. Like this is not the way you do it. If you want power, wait till the elections come up. Don't vote who you want. Vote for who you do want. And, you know, do it that way. He's not leading a peaceful change of regime.
Well, he's not. And I'll tell you, occupied people do the darndest things. And it's like I said, I think what's eventually going to happen, if it doesn't turn into like a Lebanon with parts of it occupied by Iran, and I'm sure Iran has I have no idea what the, you know, what the concentration of Iranian forces are or are not. But right now we don't know because there's whole sectors of Iraq, including Fallujah, where United States troops can't even go. And, I mean, the whole thing is a mess. The United States should get out of there. How? I don't know. But these brainy guys, these neoconservatives that got us into it, why don't they figure out some really smart way to get us out? I'll tell you, one way is by killing more and more Iraqis.
Here's what I'm saying.
Yeah, go ahead.
The insurgency, and I understand their plight, okay? And if you want, all right, the U.S. comes in, and I'll say that I didn't support it because they're blowing all our money. But I'm financially the reason. That's why I don't think we should have gone in there. But, you know, to say that, you know, the violence and the tactics they're using, you know, is helping anything, it's not. And if you want to free Iraq, you certainly don't do it the way they're doing it. It's not smart. It's just not.
Well, I mean, I'm not arguing that. I mean, I certainly don't think that killing people in that situation helps on either side. So I guess I do agree with you.
All right, you have a good one, Pete.
Okay, you too. 313-298-WRIF. Lowell from Southfield writes in, if Bush wants to say flip-flop, then Kerry gets to say flop, 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 flop. And I thought, what does this mean? And then I realized, you know, flip-flop means changing your opinion from one position to the next. Bush has certainly done that any number of times. Remember, he didn't want the 911 commission, then he said he would, and lots of other things. But a flop is also a failure. So Lowell writes in, flop, millions of lost jobs. Flop, jobs that have been regained pay $10,000 less a year. A flop, end of combat operations. Remember that Bushism? Flop, mission accomplished. Flop, bring it on. A flop, 957 dead American soldiers. 90% of Republicans support this. I wonder how many more Americans, they don't care about Iraqis, you can kill them all, right? Let God sort them out or something like that. But, hey, Republicans, since 90% of you support the war in Iraq, would you support 1,500 American dead? How about 10,000? Yeah, what's your limit? How many dead young people and a few not so young are you going to support for the mistake and the lies of George W. Bush? Here's another flop. 6,000 plus seriously wounded American soldiers. I'm not going to read all these. Flop, no weapons of mass destruction. Another flop, Abu Ghraib. Flop, Osama bin forgotten. Flop, Halliburton contracts. Flop, the world hates America. Flop, skyrocketing health care costs. Record federal deficits. Flop, record foreign trade deficits. On and on and on and on. There's too many to read. Soaring gasoline prices. Yeah, we forgot about that one. He says, your turn. What did I omit? Well, Lowell, there is a website that calls that's called thousandreasons.org. It was spelled out, thousandreasons.org, that started off with 1,000 reasons to impeach George W. Bush. Not to defeat him, to impeach him. High crimes and misdemeanors, and I think it's up to about 1,250. It's on my website. All right, let's continue. Hi, WRIF, you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
Hi, it's Paul from Harrison Township.
Hi, Paul.
Yeah, I listen to your show a lot. I like your forwardness and how you think. And my point is that, number one, that when soldiers join the military, they know they're obligated to, there could be a war at any time.
Right.
It has nothing to do with the president. They could be killed at any time, and any president can possibly send them at any time. So they don't have a choice.
Well, I know they don't have a choice.
They're in the military to know that.
Well, some of them, of course, had finished their tour of duty, and then had others that had their terms extended. So in a lot of ways, it became a forced draft. Some of the people that had been sent back and what have you. But, if you and I were sent to Iraq, we'd probably be over there killing Iraqis, and you or me might wind up with a leg shot off, and one of us might get killed. Yeah,
that's
right.
That's why I joined the military, to defend our country.
Well, except we're not defending our country over there.
Well, we do not have a choice on what we defend. You join the United States military and you do what you're told.
Well, I know, but you know that historically that hasn't been a good argument. And of course, during the Vietnam era, tens of thousands of young men went AWOL, deserted, went to Canada, burned their draft cards because there was mass opposition to a war, again, that it was based on lies and we had no business being in.
Well, they were drafted. I call those people cowards.
That were drafted?
Oh, yeah.
Not
people that are drafted, people that went AWOL and didn't want to fight. Because if they didn't want to fight for their own country, you know.
Well, again, they weren't fighting for their country. They were fighting for a lie that most people knew was. And you know, that's what John Kerry said in 1971. He said, who is going to be able to, it's a good quote, and I can't remember it exactly, something about who's going to be the last man to die for a mistake.
Okay, I follow you there. Getting back to the war now in Iraq.
Sure.
I don't really think it matters what president we have, Republican or Democrat. He's going to do the same thing he's doing now. And nothing's going to change that.
Well,
that's my opinion.
All right, Paul. I appreciate your opinion. That's what we're here for. Thank you so much, and best of luck to you. 313-298-WRIF. Email at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And hi, you're on Night Call. Welcome.
Yes, I had a couple of points. One is about the war that's going on there right now. One of the claims that's often tossed out is that the soldiers have to kill in self-defense to protect themselves. And I recall months back that one infamous incident where a couple of babies had their heads blown off when they opened up with a heavy machine gun on a car of women and children.
Well,
I don't think that's justified at all to even make the assertion of self-defense. I equate it to like a home invasion. If a gang breaks into a house and the owner pulls a shotgun and then to protect themselves they kill the owner, that does not relieve them of the onus that they didn't have a right to be there to begin with. The owner was the only one that had the right to claim self-defense.
Well, here's what happened historically. In the 19th century and before, probably 80-85% of casualties were soldiers, and civilians were 15%. It's almost the opposite now. And particularly these wars in which the United States invades countries where there's popular uprisings, like in Vietnam and in Iraq, and the truthful, I mean, once you're there, like again, if you and I are there and Paul before us, we got our own little war. That is us against them. And we're trying to stay alive. And soon we see the population that initially we were going to go in to defend, whether they're Vietnamese or Iraqis or whoever, as all of them are enemies, because any one of them at any time could be the one that would kill you or me or Paul. So when a car comes up to a checkpoint, it doesn't stop fast enough. It's real easy for a gun to go off. Two innocents get killed. And you think, well, sorry about that, but I can't take any chances. So it's built in to the type of wars, built on lies and intervening in what is becoming essentially a civil war, just like Vietnam.
Yeah, I can't imagine the amount of therapy that the returning soldiers are going to need to deal with the things that they're experiencing. The other thing I wanted to mention, you mentioned a little bit ago, talked about the profits that Michael Moore is making off of Fahrenheit 9/11.
Those are the gross figures, yeah.
Right. And I imagine there was a substantial amount of profit to be made from the distribution. I was just wondering if any of the minority Disney stockholders might have a legal case to sue Eisner for him denying them a share of that profits by him asserting his own personal political views to turn it away, when if Disney would have done it, then they would have had profits to share with the stockholders.
That is interesting. I was trying to get on my website. I don't know if it's still on there. Let's see. Part of the film's profits are going to charity. I mean, you know, Michael Moore, like anyone in entertainment that's very successful, winds up to be a millionaire. Somehow it's all right for these right-wingers, like Rush Limbaugh signed a contract, literally $750 million, and everybody said, oh, isn't that nice? And he has a 27,000-square-foot house, I guess, and probably with OxyContin in every room. Whatever happened to Rush Limbaugh's drug charges? I don't know. All right, thank you very much. Let me see if I can... What did we get in our new studio? Part of film's profits go to... after Disney refused Miramax 6 weeks later, the Weinsteins that owned it will pocket about 40% of the net, according to people familiar with the deal. And who will pick the charities to get the money? Disney, the company that refused to release the movie without having to consult either the Weinsteins or Mr. Moore. That's who's in it. It's all the unexpected result of yet another strange tussle between Disney and the Weinsteins. Wow. You know, I should have announced this right away. At 1 a.m., which is coming up in about a half an hour Eastern time here in the United States, because some of you are listening overseas, as we call it, Larry Flint, as he describes himself, the smut peddler who cares. So Larry Flint will join us in about a half an hour. And someone who we've had on before frequently goes to Cuba, a journalist, and he's written a book about the cars of Cuba. You know, no American cars have been there since 1959. So we just had the Woodward Dream Cruise, right? Some people thought it was the Woodward Nightmare Cruise, but whatever. Most people enjoyed it and had fun. Those great old cars that are cruising up and down Woodward with 1.5 million people watching, they're all in Cuba. So they're in Chris's book. Let me see. I think it's Cuba-automobiles.com, or that's on my website as well. And he talks about Cuba and travel to Cuba and the Castro government as well. So that's an interesting view. But Larry Flint, the smut peddler who cares, in about a half an hour. That was an ugly noise. Was that the line I was supposed to go to? Yeah. What's... All right, thank you. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi. I was just wondering, if the Kerry administration gets into power and Kerry pulls out of Iraq, what's going to happen to all the Iraqis that, in the pandemonium of military power leaving Iraq, there's going to be even a bigger struggle for power between the Islamic...
A lot of different factions.
Yeah, a lot of different Islamic...
Kerry has said that he is not an advocate of withdrawal. And, you know, one thing is, when you can sometimes create problems that are almost unsolvable. Yeah, sometimes, I mean, most of us have made mistakes, but usually we can correct the mistakes. But sometimes you make a mistake that is so bad. And this mistake with Iraq goes back way into the late 70s and particularly into the 1980s when Ronald Reagan and George Bush were the big supporters of Saddam Hussein and built him up, let him build up this chemical arsenal. And Donald Rumsfeld went over there, and I forgot the year, and after he had gassed the Kurds, shook his hands, gave him a pair of golden spurs. That's right. Donald Rumsfeld gave Saddam Hussein a pair of golden spurs. So once it gets to this point, creating solutions is really difficult. And in a lot of ways, I don't have any bright ideas for what to do. Maybe the bright guys that got us into it ought to figure out how to get us out.
Yeah, I agree with that. I wanted to bring up another point,
sure,
too. You say that the Bush administration keeps looting our money and things like that. I agree with half and half agree with you. I too noticed that all the money disappearing and things, but also Bush has given gigantic tax breaks during his administration, which helped the economy.
Well, it hasn't helped the economy. The economy is still doing badly in terms of jobs, but the vast majority of those those tax breaks have gone to the wealthy. If you make $50,000, you get an extra $1,000. If you're making $30,000, it's down to like $400. If you're making $1.5 million, you get $75,000. And if you're making $1.5 million, you're kind of maxed out on consumption. So you tend to invest it, which means that the price of stocks goes up, and then the wealthy get wealthier. But the gap between the rich and the poor is getting worse, and one of it is because of the tax structure we have. There ought to be, like there used to be up until like 1960, a sort of a tax that realizes that concentrations of wealth translates into political power and erodes democracy. So you could do this. You could have over $5 million, all income is taxed 90%. So, God, what a commie. You only want people to have an income of $5 million a year. That would mean that people like the Waltons and all that wouldn't have much of an interest in looting their workers with the with the terrible wages they pay, nor would any of these other big companies. But, that's not even brought up as a political consideration. All right, I got to do a break. Thanks for joining us.
This is the Riffs Award-winning Night Call with Peter Werby. You can call in at 313-298-WRIF. Peter will return with more of your calls in just a moment.
Hi, I'm David Hall with some late-night news from Rock Financial. Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan raised the Fed funds rate by 0.25%. And the most important thing Greenspan said is that in the future, the Fed plans to keep on raising interest rates at a measured pace. It's a sure thing. Before long, mortgage interest rates are going to rise. So what should you do if you're thinking about refinancing or purchasing a new home? Go to rockfinancial.com today. That's right. Go to rockfinancial.com and play with our mortgage calculators. Find out how much home you can afford and how much you'll save by refinancing. Because right now, even with fluctuations in the market, mortgage interest rates are still historically low. If you're thinking of purchasing a home or refinancing, don't wait. Go to rockfinancial.com right now. That's rockfinancial.com. It could easily make the difference in thousands of dollars a year in your payment. The Fed says they're going to continue to raise rates. Lock in before Greenspan locks you out. Go to rockfinancial.com. That's rockfinancial.com.
Rock Financial is a Quicken Loans company, equal housing lender.
It's party time. Get a real feel of erotic image featuring Michigan's hottest male and female strippers.
Erotic image. Add the stripper to any party and watch your party come alive.
Erotic Image delivers the sexiest and most seductive entertainers right to your doorstep or wherever the party's at.
For your next bachelor, bachelorette, birthday, or any party occasion, give the gift that unwraps itself. Call Erotic Image at 888-41-STRIP.
Erotic Image, the name that says it all. Sexy, provocative, outrageous, but all in good fun.
Erotic Image, 888-41-STRIP.
Surf Erotic Image at eroticimage.com, the official home of Brutal Betty, the Erotic Image Dream Girls, the incredible hunks of Men in Motion, and those naughty awesome twosomes, the wild girly girls. Due to popular demand, Erotic Image has hosts and hostesses to kick off your party. Try one.
Go online and explore the
the Erotic Image Cyber Showcase. View the dancers, check their prices, and place your order online.
Erotic Image, where image is expertise, and the experience is always erotic.
Call Erotic Image at 888-41-STRIP. That's 888-41-STRIP.
Erotic Image, where image is everything.
Stick around.
More Night Call with Peter Werby. Coming up next.
Using X-ray vision to find his car, soaring up escalators at lightning speed, enduring long security lines on legs of steel, and paying too much cash to fly fast. It's the adventures of Power Traveler. Only Bishop Airport Kryptonite can zap him into reality and get him back on track to sane travel and fares he can really afford on AirTran Airways from Flint.
Our hero lands on the gates of AirTran Airways.
To save Power Traveler and more of his kind, they've agreed to add more non-stop flights from Flint. On December 17th, he can slow down, relax, and fly a daily non-stop flight from Flint to Tampa. No X-ray vision, soaring, or legs of steel required. All extra cash saved can start him on a new adventure in Tampa or even Fort Lauderdale. Their Saturday-only non-stop flights start November 4th, and he can fly non-stop to Orlando or Atlanta any day of the week, connecting to over 40 cities nationwide.
Go, there's nothing stopping you. Book your ticket from Flint now at AirTran.com, your local travel agent, or 1-800-AIRTRAN.
You can get there from here.
Why are men all over America talking about Testosterpro? Listen.
After I tried Testosterpro, I felt like I was the man I wanted to be. I wish I'd found out about it sooner because I feel like I'm more of a man now than when I was younger.
I'm Dr. Richard Cohen, MD, men's health specialist. In many men, testosterone levels can fall rapidly after age 35. But now there's Testosterpro, the complete performance boosting system I designed for men who are starting to feel their age. If you don't feel like the man you used to be, call now for a 30-day risk-free trial of the Testosterpro system, which includes my bonus report on aging and its effects on energy, sex drive, and stamina, free with your order.
Call now for your confidential trial of Testosterpro. 1-800-897-3124. 1-800-897-3124. Results will vary. 1-800-897-3124. Guaranteed or your money back. 1-800-897-3124.
This is Nightcall. This is Nightcall. The Risk Podium Talk Show. Now, here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much. Got about 20 minutes left, and Larry Flint, the smut peddler who cares. We'll see what he cares about when we talk to him. Let's see, more email at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. If you really hate both candidates, I don't think he meant me. I mean, I was, I'll read it. And decide you do not want a say in who will lead our country for the next 4 years. A vote for Nader won't do anything but boost his ego. If you want to vote for someone else, look into supporting the Green Party, or the Libertarian Party, or the Constitution Party. Vote for growing a third party. Don't vote for a lying egomaniac like Nader, says Matt. The Nader candidacy isn't building support for anything but Nader. While the Republicans are financing a lot of Nader's attempts to get on the ballot, obviously they think it'll take left votes away from Kerry. They are. What a pack of scum. Republicans. Chris writes in the call, talkyes@yahoo.com. I have to disagree with you about the comments from the Iraqi Olympic team. Well, how can you disagree with me, Chris, about what the Iraqi Olympic team said? Here's what one midfielder said. How will Bush meet his God, having slaughtered so many men and women in Iraq? He has committed so many crimes. Another one said that he would, if he wasn't playing soccer on the team, he would be an insurgent in Fallujah. Chris says, first of all, one of Saddam's sons used to be in control of the Iraqi team, and they were tortured if they lost. Yeah, that's right. If my memory serves me right, if they performed poorly, you're right. Would they rather go back to that oppression? Well, no. I mean, what they're saying is, George Bush, stop using our team for your election ads. That's what it was all about. Seems like they want to have their cake and eat it, too. I don't agree with this war, but come on, let's not get as loony as the Republicans. All right, let's go back to our phones. 313-298-WRIF. Hi, it's Night Call. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, how's it going, Peter?
Going great.
Yeah, I was just wondering, you said something about there was a guy from Port Huron that called in and said that the Democrats are going to take away all the guns. And I'm just, are people really ignorant enough to think that a party's going to go in and take away a constitutional right, such as the right to bear arms from the entire United States?
I think some people are dumb enough. They're dumb enough on the gay issue, they're dumb enough on the God issue, and they're dumb enough on the guns issue.
Yeah, that's what I think, too. And it's just, it enrages me because these people do not realize you're just voting for the man because he wants guns. That's the only thing you care about. There's nothing else that you care about.
Well, for one thing, Bush, I mean, talk about flip-flops. Bush said he would renew the ban on assault weapons, so it's something that all police forces want. And then, of course, he waffled, he flip-flopped, and now he's not promoting it. And but, yeah, see, Kerry is going out of his way to be real military. He's they show him skeet shooting and, yeah. But, no, it's just NRA propaganda that somehow the Democrats are going to take away everyone's guns.
I don't understand why that people even think that whatsoever. And for the abortion, like, they're really going to make it, you know, I don't know, it's ridiculous.
Well, one person said they didn't like Bush, thought the war was wrong, but because of their religion, they could never vote for someone who supported abortion. In other words, a woman's right to choose.
Right.
And I sort of thought, well, I mean, it's pretty heavy ethical commitment. I said, well, why don't you stay home? And she said, well, maybe I'll vote for Nader. And I'm thinking, I didn't say anything, because Nader obviously supports pro-choice, right?
Yeah, I think he does, yeah.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
He's not real strong on women's issues, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, thank you very much.
Hey, thanks, Peter.
Appreciate you calling in. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Pete, how you doing?
Good, thanks.
Hey, I just got a couple, three things I want to bring up. Number one, getting back to the scumbags who are trying to malign Kerry's war record, I guess the attitude we need to take is Bush isn't a deserter because of his pay stubs. That means Kerry is a hero because of his medals.
There you go.
And then moving along, people have been talking about Iraq and if we back out and stuff now. Robert Scheer was on C-SPAN a couple of months ago, and basically he said we have to let these people write their own history, just like we did with Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And,
after we lost 60,000 men and killed 3 million Iraqi civilians.
That was his point, is that we have to do that before we lose 50,000 guys.
Yeah. Well, you know, I put that, I don't know if you heard me earlier, 90% of Republicans support this war, and I say that they're willing to sacrifice any number, and I'm saying that purposely, any number of American men and women, because it would be politically disastrous for Bush to have to pull out or stop the war or admit that it was a mistake. So I wonder how many American soldiers are they willing to sacrifice on this fool's errand that Bush has sent them on?
What was Nixon's words for peace with honor and 50,000 dead?
Yeah.
One other thing, do you know who Chambers Johnson is?
Why do I know that name but can't bring it to my mind?
He's an ex-CIA spook who has written a couple of books, and his recent book is something called Sorrows of Empire. He would be an excellent guest.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
But anyway, that was all.
Thank you.
Hey, take care.
Thank you for joining us. I appreciate it. I do have our next line. Thank you, Dan. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Yeah, hi, Peter.
Hi.
My name is Bob.
Hi, Bob.
You were talking about the Vietnam War or whatever,
mm-hmm.
And from what I understand, it wasn't declared as a war. It was declared as a policing action. We were over there just to police, people and what have you.
Yeah, whatever happened to the Constitution that says only Congress shall declare war?
I don't know.
That went away
a long, long time ago.
Yeah.
And then, to change the subject here, what you're talking about, Bush, all right? Bush shouldn't really be in office because he bought votes down there in Florida.
Yeah, and he actually, one of the things that he did was he conspired with his brother's Secretary of State to suppress the African-American vote. Had every black person been allowed to vote properly in Florida, we wouldn't even be having this discussion because... we would probably have continuing prosperity under President Gore.
This is true, but we're in the United States of America, and we're free people, so we can have this discussion and have freedom of speech, just like I listen to your show all the time, that, you know...
I don't think maybe I didn't make myself clear. I may not have. What I meant was that if if African Americans hadn't been cheated out of the vote in Florida, Gore would have easily won Florida. Gore would be the president. We wouldn't be in a war in Iraq, and we wouldn't be having all these arguments. That's what I meant.
Right.
Yeah.
We're not having arguments. We're having discussions.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
you know?
or whatever. Right.
But, you know, this is freedom of speech. This is the United States of America. And,
got to be.
You know, and earlier I was listening to you. You were apologizing for telling the truth.
Was I?
You told the honest-to-God truth, all right, and you turned around and apologized for it.
I don't remember doing that, but who knows? I may have.
Okay. Well, I can't remember the whole program that you were on. But
yeah.
You said, you know... Well, you were talking about Warren out there, right? You talked about Warren.
Oh, I said that we hadn't called the Warren police Nazis or stormtroopers. At least I hadn't.
Okay. But if you had, you're in the United States of America. And you have
you
the
can
freedom
do
of
it.
Speech.
All
well,
right.
You have a radio station.
I got you.
Okay.
Thank you, Bob.
Thanks.
All right. Don't spell it backwards. Right. All right. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air.
Hey, Pete, this is Eric. I'd like to change the subject here for a
sure.
bit. I'd like to know if you know anything about the recent medical marijuana law passed in Detroit.
I know that it was passed, and the details of it are on my website if you need information.
Okay, and PeterWerbe.com?
PeterWerbe.com, W-E-R-B-E, yeah.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. And I'd just like to say I've been listening to you for 22 years. Since I was 11, and you're pretty much forward to who I am today. Thank you.
Boy. Yeah, I was only like 12 or 13 then. Yeah, did we properly salute the voters of Detroit that voted in medical marijuana? These people, yeah, we did, because I remember talking about John Ashcroft, who's had these raids on these marijuana hospices, people smoking marijuana to relieve the pain of chemotherapy or of impending death. Ashcroft sends in stormtroopers. I won't apologize for that one, Bob. All right. They arrested people out in California. What was this? I actually had interviewed this woman. Valerie, I don't know. Can't remember her name. Hi, WRF, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing tonight, Peter?
Doing good.
Hey, I just had a couple comments. One was I couldn't agree with you more about this, the Republic. It's really getting dirty with the Swift Boat campaign stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They are so hypocritical, especially when they're trying to put a guy back in office who shunned the military, and he shunned Vietnam altogether. You know, his daddy got him into the National Guard in Texas, flying obsolete planes. Then he didn't even finish out his duty. And they have the gall to criticize a guy who volunteered to go, and they're questioning his wound. It's just so hypocritical.
Well, it is, but Bush, of course, is saying that he respects and honors Kerry's service and doesn't think that there should be any ads like that, but he won't specifically condemn it. And then you dig a little deeper into it. It sounds like I'm doing is running ads for my website. There's a whole investigation about who's behind it, and it's all Republican operatives. It's all tied into the White House, Karl Rove, the political advisor to Bush.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a Republican operation. Pure and simple.
It's trust.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
This is Andy Savage. I just was calling to talk to you. I was wondering what you thought. I've been watching the campaign for a number of years now, and I was curious what you thought about Donald Rumsfeld. Because to me, I think he's probably one of the scariest people in the government today.
He is. He is indeed. Yeah, I mean, I said earlier, he's the guy that presented Saddam Hussein with a pair of golden spurs for his for being a loyal ally of the Bush and Reagan governments. I mean, that's where we got into it all, and that's where the root of the problem, and that's why we can't solve it easily. The problem is so deep and been such a failure on the part of these guys that look, I mean, we haven't talked about this in a while. these Republicans and these conservatives, they come up, they speak with such authority, and it's really born of wealth and privilege and the fact that they never have to pay for their mistakes. So they screw up. People are killed by the hundreds if they're lucky, the tens of thousands if they're unlucky, and all they do is they wind up in the next Republican government. Some of them who violated the Constitution, broke congressional law, actually got convicted, proving that crime pays either got brought back into the government. John Negroponte, who's the so-called ambassador to Iraq, supported death squads in Honduras. Somebody like Oliver North, who a pure and simple fascist, who purposely broke the laws of Congress, becomes a millionaire talk show host. Elliot Abrams, also convicted. On and on and on. I mean, this corrupt government of Reagan and Bush, and they're always crowing about the Constitution and law, and they're the biggest lawbreakers and corrupt SOBs that this country has seen.
Well, my question is, why haven't we heard more about the Abu Ghraib prison scandal and all the things that supposedly, you listen to different programs on television and radio, and they talk about exactly what he was involved in and what, he put into writing and what he, they come back to him and they say, well, is he the one responsible for the way that we interrogate people?
Well, of course he is. He gave all of the rationale. And there's another person should be hauled before the world court for war crimes at Abu Ghraib. But here's what happens. The higher up the chain of command, the softer the orders become. If you're in that prison, the guy that's going to puts a sack over someone's head and beat the living crap out of him or sick a dog on him says real directly, give him the works. But by the time it emanates from the top, it's something we must do everything in our power to elicit the necessary intelligence. Well, the more it goes down the chain, the harsher it becomes, and the results of those very sophisticated, very calm order giving become. Yeah, and one of the things, you're not going to see Rumsfeld at the Republican convention. In fact, you're only going to see people who do not represent the Republican Party at all. You're going to see a lot of black faces on the dais there, where you're going to see like probably about 95% white delegates. You're going to see all these liberal Republicans, like if you can call them liberal, Arnold Schwarzenegger and Governor Pataki and ex-Mayor Giuliani and Mayor Bloomberg. All these guys who are pro-choice, pro-gay, and stuff like that. That's who they're going to try to fool the American people into saying that they represent the American people. And they're going to give that hideous Democratic senator from Georgia, Zell Miller, the keynote address. They don't even have a Republican doing it. They've got some Democratic Party turncoat.
Well, my question is, how far, the countries between Britain and Australia, obviously there's threats against those nations and us, being the United States. And my question is, how far are they willing to go to get information? I mean, if there's a supposed risk out there that's, an urgent risk to our, industrial nations, how far are they willing to go, really?
Well, they're willing to torture people and have done it and held people illegally. So these are all the hallmarks of vile dictatorships that employ methods of interrogation like that, that hold people for years without trial. And that's exactly what the United States under Bush Co. has done. It's absolutely disgraceful. And the reason, there's a lot of reasons not to do it. I mean, first and foremost, to try to adhere to some standard of human dignity and international law. But what is done to other people can be done to our people as well. And one of the reasons you don't want to pull the fingernails out of other people is other people can begin to do that to you and say, hey, what the hell? All right, thank you very much. Thanks for being our last caller. All right, stay tuned. We're going to be talking with Larry Flint, the smut peddler who cares, when we come back.
Imagine if we Caribbeans took life as seriously as the rest of the world.
Man, I got a job interview. How shall I play it?
Be humble.
Be cocky.
Cocky so 80s. Tell them you're a team player.
Tell them you're a major player.
Tell them you can add value.
Tell them you can make their stock price soar on Wall Street.
Whatever they offer, accept it.
Tell them you want double. Show us your business card.
Winston. Goat herd. Cool font.
No, it's too aggressive. It should be a serif.
Serifs are for losers.
Man, I can't decide. I need a sabbatical.
Relax. Malibu makes choosing seriously easy. Whether you choose new pineapple or new mango, you can't go wrong. They're both made with the finest Caribbean rum, and they both taste amazing with lemon-lime soda. Malibu, it's seriously easygoing.
Take it easy. Drink in moderation. Malibu Caribbean rum with natural mango or pineapple flavor, 21% alcohol by volume. Allied Domex Spirits, USA, Westport, Connecticut.
Men, how do you like to last even longer in the bedroom? Now you can with Maxtral, the new climax control system for men. Maxtral lets you last longer than you ever thought possible, so you can prolong the pleasure and maximize the control. Maxtral is scientifically formulated to give you the kind of stamina you want, and a woman never forgets. Maxtral is for men of all ages. It's available without a prescription, and it can give you more satisfaction than ever before. Now you can make the pleasure go on and on with Maxtral, maximum control for men. Ask your doctor about Maxtral or call now and try Maxtral free for 30 days. 1-800-270-9580. 1-800-270-9580. You pay only shipping and handling. Call now, have your credit card handy, and try Maxtral free for 30 days. 1-800-270-9580. 1-800-270-9580.
Okay, so my friend Terry won another Harley-Davidson motorcycle in a strip poker game.
I only have a pair.
I only have a pair, too.
Yeah! Here we go.
So now he's going to sell his extra bike. He lists his bike in the paper, gets phone calls all hours of the night, has people dropping by like 24-7.
Damn, you're hot, sorry, party.
And he even tries taking it to a swap meet.
Ooh. Do you take nature's credit cards, stud boy?
And then Terry's head explodes. All our friends tell Terry, go to sell at Motown, go to sell at Motown. So we go to Motown Harley-Davidson and Taylor. And the salesperson says Motown buys bikes, takes trade-ins or consignments. Terry argues no way. And they say, we'll take it today. And he says, no way. And they say, we'll take it today. And Terry says, okay. So Terry is a one-bike kind of guy again. Back up playing strip poker.
I only have a pair. Do you take nature's credit card?
No! The end! Fun, food, and entertainment every Sunday to summer during Motown Fun Day Sundays. Log on to MotownHarley.com for more information. Motown Harley-Davidson in Teller on Telegraph just north of Eureka. Remember, guys, chicks dig a guy on a real motorcycle. Sell your bike in Motown! Okay.
Divorce. Custody. Support. Three words that tell a man you have a serious problem. You can try to solve your problem by ignoring it, by calling some new lawyers who claim to suddenly be into men's rights, or by choosing a lawyer with the flip of a coin. Or you can tackle your problem with the experienced professionals at ADAM, the American Divorce Association for Men. You can call ADAM at 248-356-ADAM, and they'll answer your questions by phone at no charge. ADAM has been successfully representing white-collar professionals, business owners, doctors, blue-collar workers, and men just like you for over a decade. With ADAM, you get the advantages of a large law firm, but receive the attention and dedication of one experienced attorney who will handle your case from beginning to end. Because of its many years of experience, ADAM can design a strategy to help you protect your home, your property, your children, and your future. And remember, while others may claim to be the so-called new answer in men's rights, ADAM, through dedication, knowledge, and experience, keeps proving they're the right answer when it comes to protecting men in divorce. Call ADAM today at 248-356-ADAM. That's 248-356-ADAM.
Have you felt the power of music? The magnificent sound of a symphony? The perfectly played notes that send shivers down your spine? This is the power of music. And you will feel it at the DSO. Join us and share in an amazing evening of music as conductor Nene Yerby opens the season with Orff's rousing masterpiece, Carmina Burana. Be there for this moving and memorable performance as our maestro kicks off his final season with the Detroit Symphony Orchestra. It's Carmina Burana, Thursday through Sunday, September 9th through the 12th. Feel it, the power of the DSO at the Max. For tickets, call 313-576-5111. That's 313-576-5111. Or visit DetroitSymphony.com.
This is WRIF in Detroit.
Thank you very much for joining me. It's a pleasure to bring to the Peter Werby Show Larry Flint. Larry Flint, of course, the outspoken and controversial publisher of Hustler magazine. He's founder of Larry Flint Publications. And best of all, for our purposes here on the Peter Werby Show, he's just come out with a new book from Kensington. It's called Sex, Lies, and Politics, The Naked Truth. Larry Flint, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Glad to be here.
Tell me, in your book, you refer to yourself as a smut peddler. You say you're just a smut peddler with ideas, a smut peddler who cares. Why do you define yourself in those terms?
Well, people always find it necessary to define me with those sort of adjectives, so I do it up front so they don't have the opportunity. But when I say I'm a smut peddler who cares, I care about the same ills that affect society that all the rest of us care about.
Now, yes, indeed, and that's what's covered in Sex, Lies, and Politics, The Naked Truth. I should have added that subtitle to it. Tell people what the general theme of your book is.
Well, I took a six-year period of our history, and it's probably the most bizarre of all. The average American don't realize how much has happened in the last 6 years. We had the impeachment hearings, the election debacle, Bush and Ashcroft and the Patriot Act, and the Bush term in itself, and each one of those would lend itself to a whole book. But I tried to just write in a manner that the lay person could understand what the issues were involved. You know, several newspapers floated a story out of Florida shortly after the election that, you know, that Bush won the election. And, you know, there's still people in this country today that actually think Bush won the election, and he didn't. And we've investigated that thoroughly, and we work with the BBC, who is doing a documentary on Florida on the same issue.
This must be Greg Palast.
Yeah, Greg Palast.
Yes, a frequent guest on the Peter Werby Show.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
No, Greg's a great guy. We do a lot of work with him, you know. And, you know, of course, everybody remembers my involvement in the impeachment activities. Back during the impeachment, when I would go home every night and turn on the TV, it was sort of like Bash Clinton night, no matter what channel I switched to. But I would look at the polls, and polls would say that 70% of the people feel that he should still stay in office. So I thought, you know, this is partisan. This is inherently unfair, and, you know, somebody should step up to the plate and let people know that hypocrisy crosses party lines. So,
well,
we did a pretty good job of it.
Well,
we
go ahead.
We got Robert Livingston, who was scheduled to take Newt Gingrich's job as Speaker of the House, and when he resigned, he did an interview with the New York Times, and he referred to me as a bottom feeder, and they called me for a comment, and I said, yeah, that's right, but look what I found when I got down there.
Well, let's retell the story, because you do, Larry Flynt, tell the story of Robert Livingston in your book, Sex, Lies, and Politics. Tell us quickly that story. Robert Livingston was a Republican from Louisiana, and he was another one of these guys on their high horse, right, about how immoral Clinton was.
Yeah, he was attacking Clinton every day, and when he was first confronted with these charges, he said, oh, I may have strayed from my marriage, but never with anybody that worked for me or never a lobbyist. We had three sources on him. One was a lobbyist, one was an intern that worked for him, and one was a judge from his local district. So, you know, I mean, these guys, you know, are just so slimy, you know, it's unbelievable.
Well, let's talk about these guys. It seems to me, I mean, I was surprised when recently the New Jersey governor came out with certainly the sexual end of it isn't even the scandal, but what is it about these Republicans that they are involved in these scandals all the time? This Bush advisor to the Catholics just had to resign because of a sex scandal.
Well, see, there's a whole new thought on that. if you're born into a conservative family and you're raised in a conservative household, when you leave that household and go out in the world, you're going to have conservative sexual attitudes and conservative fantasies. Well, you know, the people sort of expect liberals to play a little loose with, you know, their womanizing, but the Republicans, they're so uptight, they keep everything in the closet, you know. Most of them are Christian fundamentalists in addition to that, you know. So they're much easier to catch than the Democrats.
Now, you've when you've spent the sums that you have, and many times you had to sort of give rewards for this information, is this something that winds up profitable in terms of sales or profitable in terms of what you want to see for the political direction of our country, or both?
Well, it does sound like for it to be profitable, but it doesn't matter whether it's profitable or not. If it's important, we do it. One guy that we finally got out of Congress was Bob Barr, who was the rabid congressman from Georgia who used to be a head of the pro-life caucus in the House. And he would go out on the floor and say abortion is equivalent to murder. And then he'd go home, take his wife to the hospital for abortion, he would pay for it with his own private check, you know, which we have a copy of. But, I mean, that's the type of hypocrisy that really rips at the thread of our democracy. But it doesn't just lie in a few names that we've talked about now. Our system has become corrupt because, and, you know, everybody likes to say special interest, but here's how it happens. They go to Washington with the best intentions. They know if they're going to get reelected because these races are so expensive, they're going to need special interest money. And they're not going to vote against their special interest. But if we could get the other half of the people that don't turn out for election to come out and vote, in about 8 years, we could create a revolving door in Washington, and we could send all those political hacks back to their home district.
Wouldn't that be nice? In fact, I suspect, at least would hope, because usually the electorate in an election or in a presidential election year still is only around 50%. Just another 10%, I think, probably will send George Bush back to Texas. Larry Flint, let's talk a little about just each of the, in fact, we have, but maybe a little more specifically about the title of your book, Sex, Lies, and Politics. And we've talked a little about sex and hypocrisy. And one of the things that I get from your book is that, and I suppose with all of us, hypocrisy is the thing we hate the most. That's true with you, I assume?
Absolutely, you know, because, and there's nothing worse for our democracy than hypocrisy. You know, you need a transparent government, and our founding fathers always envisioned that. And we've got our whole system is screwed up. We know that our political system is screwed up. Now, we all like to think that when the chips are down, the Supreme Court will do the right thing. Well, they didn't in Florida, and they lost a lot of their luster, and they're going to be many decades getting it back. And what's happened over the last few decades is the Supreme Court has emerged as a new legislative body because Congress has shrugged its responsibility, leaving the Supreme Court to deal with decisions that affect our everyday lives.
Mm-hmm. Let's, as I said at the beginning of the program, Larry Flint, you described yourself as a smut peddler with ideas and a smut peddler who cares, but you also have a conscience. Maybe the Republicans wouldn't think so, but I was thinking about the Jessica Lynch story that you begin to talk about. I think it's just in the introduction to your book, Sex, Lies, and Politics. Could you just, I mean, I...
I was brought some nude photographs by a couple of soldiers that served with Private Lynch in Iraq, and I bought them, but before I did the story, I started familiarizing myself with what had happened to her.
Yeah, these are nude photographs of Jessica Lynch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what happened was, you know, the Pentagon put out that she was this Rambo, you know, Joan of Arc, fired her gun until it jammed, and, you know, you've been shot, you've been stabbed, and taken to this Iraqi hospital. But what they didn't tell you is that those doctors did everything they could to save her life. They tried to send her back to her unit. The unit wouldn't accept her because the government hadn't, our government, the Pentagon, hadn't quite arranged for this big Hollywood rescue that they wanted to film. You know, and...
So it's more hypocrisy, more of playing with our emotions.
Yeah, have our little Joan of Arc, you know, coming out and upselling the war.
So why didn't Larry Flint publish those photographs? That seemed, there it was, Jessica Lynch topless.
Because she was a victim, you know. I mean, she's not a hypocrite. And she had no celebrity. She had no icon status, you know. I mean, if Rumsfeld wants to take advantage of some 19-year-old kid from West Virginia, let him do it. But I'm not going to.
Mm-hmm. Now, does she know of this whole set of circumstances, Jessica Lynch? Does she know that you had the photos and didn't use them?
Yes, and I even told her if she wanted them, if she would come to my office, she could have them. I haven't heard from her.
Now, you say in your book, Sex, Lies, and Politics, that that you wish our soldiers well in their sexual escapades, that somehow that you can't really expect them to, these young people to be sexless in the prime of their life.
Well, of course you can't, you know. I mean, it's so bad that sex has... so many hang-ups that go along with it. You know, the church has had its hand on our crotch for over 2,000 years, and the government is exceedingly moving in that direction, feeling if they can control your pleasure center, they can control you. I don't know if it'll happen in my lifetime, but I hope the day will come that we can be a healthy sexual nation and have a lot happier people and a lot less abortion, a lot less venereal disease. See, we're teaching sex education in our schools, but we're not teaching sexual responsibility.
Well, you know, Larry Flint, some people, I mean, from the right to the left, would say Larry Flint's enterprises really work in the opposite direction in terms of responsibility, that it's sex without responsibility, it's the portrayal of images that are unobtainable for men and threatening in terms of body image for women. How would you respond to that?
You're safer in the adult industry having sex than you are with your next-door neighbor.
Yeah.
So the venereal disease is practically eliminated there. And the women are making a free choice. They decide to work any adult industry, and that's their decision, and it should be their decision.
Do you think it's odd that that number of extraordinarily attractive young women, seems like an extraordinary percentage of young attractive women, as you say, freely choose to be in adult movies? I mean, that always is something that could come, you know, back to bite them in the butt.
Well, you know, what's really, really, really surprised me from when I started Hustler 30 years ago is how young they are today. I'm talking about 18, 19, 20 years old. You know, they used to be in the mid to late 20s, you know, in the 70s. So I often quiz a lot of the girls and say, you know, look, you're not going to be a Marilyn Monroe. They say, yeah, I know it, but I've always wanted to do this since I was 13 years old. Huh. What did your mother and father think about it? They said, yeah, my father thinks it's too late. How about your mother? Well, she told me when she heard out what I wanted to do when I was coming to California, she said, well, when you get there, you'll be the very best of what you do.
Wow.
So, now, I mean, that's the type of family that I can't relate to. I couldn't have that relationship with my kids or that kind of dialogue with them. So I guess, in a way, I'm old-fashioned, not as old-fashioned as my father or, you know, people of that ilk. But times are changing. Times are definitely changing.
Let's go back a little, though, because I thought that was an extraordinarily interesting answer, and it gave us an idea of motivation for being in adult films. Let me reintroduce you, though. You're listening to The Peter Werbe Show. My guest is Larry Flynt, and the book from Kensington is Sex, Lies, and Politics, The Naked Truth. And but you...
We'll be signing. Don't forget where we're signing now.
Oh, okay, but this is taped, so it's not going to, we're not going to be able to publicize your appearance at
Border. It won't be out today.
No, but it's going to be, you know, listened to in our Detroit station.
They'll still have books here. Yeah.
Yes. I have a feeling this is going to wind up to be a bestseller. Let me, though, go back to what we were talking about. You said you encourage sexual responsibility. I said the argument often is that Hustler Enterprises and other magazines and what have you, videos, really talk about a lack of responsibility.
Once you're an adult, you make your choices then as to what your profession might be or whether you decide when or who you want to indulge in a relationship with. But I am referring to teenagers where they're not being taught the consequences of what it's like to bring a child into this world when it could mess up two careers, the woman that wants to be a doctor or a lawyer, and the man that wants to be a doctor or a lawyer, you know. Women having children too young can really destroy their lives in terms of what they want to accomplish and the lifestyle that they want to try and attain. So I don't think that aspect is being taught.
Mm-hmm.
The kids in school, you know.
Well, let's go. We'll wind up spending the whole time on sex, and we've only have about 5 minutes left with Larry Flynt. It's Sex, Lies, and Politics. Lies and Politics. Who, is there a liar's derby? And if there is, who would you put in number one spot?
Say that over again.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're the Sex, Lies, and Politics, and I'm asking who would you say is the biggest liar today?
Oh, George Bush, without a doubt.
Well,
you know, there was a show last fall where this lady, she studies body language, and she consults with lawyers during trials to try and help select jurors, you know,
mm-hmm.
in terms of their personality based on speech and body language. She said They asked her the same question he asked me. She says, George Bush don't know how to tell the truth.
Mm.
And I think a lot of that's true. He's so full of it, you know. I mean, and I don't think he's even aware of it himself.
Well, let me ask you just a personal question. You were shot in an assassination attempt in 1978. And am I correct that they never found the assassin?
No, they did. It was a white racist.
But he was never prosecuted.
He was prosecuted on unrelated charges. Committee. He had killed a black and white couple jogging up Utah. He shot Vernon Jordan in the back about 25 years ago. And he's now waiting on two death sentences. But they never prosecuted him for me because there was no point to. He would get the death penalty in my case, but I'm also opposed to the death penalty.
I was just going to say, you know, people always say, well, what would you do if it was, you know, like your son or daughter or father or mother? Here's a man that has confined you to a wheelchair for your life, and yet you don't support the death penalty even for a man this monstrous.
No, I don't. You know, if someone could convince me that it was a deterrent, I would gladly support it. But I've studied several aspects of this, and the best example in trying to argue the death penalty is in the Victorian era in the public square in London. Every Saturday they would hang pickpockets because pickpocketing was a capital offense then. So when they would hang the pickpockets, they found that there were people going through the crowds picking the pockets of the people watching the pickpockets get hanged.
Wow.
There is no evidence, scientific or otherwise, that would support as the death penalty is a deterrent.
Larry Flint, we just have about a minute or so left, and I know you have a busy schedule today here in Detroit. You've exposed so many hypocrites. Do you have stuff in the hopper? Are there people in Washington or wherever that are worried about what you're going to expose next?
Well, I'm not actively looking. We've established ourselves where people know where they can come to with a story and, you know, and also get paid for it. And I don't have a problem with that either because you can think, well, people will always embellish their story. But on the other hand, someone who may never say anything won't say something unless they're being paid. So I think one cancels the other out.
Mm-hmm.
So our door is always open, and we're primarily, you know, interested in honest government, you know, and we just do our small part, whatever we can do.
And you can go to Larry Flint, FLYNT, LarryFlint.com. Boy, 30 seconds left. Any prediction for the elections this fall? Not what you'd like to see happen, but what you actually think. Is George Bush going to be elected for the first time?
I'm for anybody but Bush. I'd even accept Sharpton.
Well, he's not running.
If this country re-elects George Bush, they deserve him.
Well, thank you so much. I know you had a busy day, and I appreciate you taking the time. My guest has been Larry Flint, publisher of Hustler and Hustler Enterprises. Great new book out, Sex, Lies, and Politics, The Naked Truth. It's published by Kensington. Should be available in almost all bookstores. Try your independent bookstore first, then on to the chains. Larry Flint, thanks for joining me on The Peter Werbe Show.
Thank you, Ryan. You're listening to WR.
WRIF.com.
Time is running out. Time is running out on the best deal ever, on your opportunity to make an investment that can help you make more money, that will change your life forever. Time is running out on your chance to register for Oakland Community College's fall 2004 semester. Final walk-in registration for fall classes is on August 30th and September 1st. Register on the web or visit any of OCC's five convenient campuses to sign up for your choice of thousands of day, night, and weekend classes in literally hundreds of subjects like business, psychology, computer information systems, physics, English, pre-engineering, robotics, and more. If you want to take a giant step to a better life, Oakland Community College is your educational answer. Call or visit your local OCC campus now. They're in Auburn Hills, Waterford, Farmington Hills, Royal Oak, and Southfield. Remember, final walk-in registration is August 30th and September 1st. Oakland Community College. Get anywhere from here.
Fall classes begin September 2nd. Get your clubs ready and head out to Treetops Resort. Treetops, located in Gaylord, Michigan, is home to the number one par 3 course in the U.S. Treetops is proud to be rated the top golf course to play by Golf Magazine, as well as being recognized as being a silver medal award winner. Also ranked by USA Today as the top 10 places to take dad, this is certainly a place where you need to be. There are four unforgettable courses, three of them designed by top-notch golfers. So call now and make certain you're able to take in the incredible sights of Treetops Resort. Call 1-888-TREETOPS. That's 1-888-TREETOPS. Be sure to ask for the WRIF Stay and Play offer for just $99 during the month of August. That's 1-888-TREETOPS for this special price. Oh, and when you call, make sure you ask for the great prices on ski packages available for this winter. Offer subject to availability. Some restrictions apply. The $99 Stay and Play offer won't last forever, so call now. 1-888-TREETOPS. This is WRIF.com.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
What the hell does Detroit want with Arkansas?
Well, you know, just same old thing. Just shoot the breeze, you know.
Damn, I ain't got time to mess you damn people up there. I got work to do here, and you keep calling, raising hell with me. What's the matter? Every week, or...
Well, you become an important part of the program, Delbert. It's actually should be a compliment.
Yeah.
What the hell does Michigan want with Arkansas?
I guess this is the first time we've run into you in a bad mood.
Well, you know, I guess everybody gets that once in a while after so much irritation.
Yeah.
Did something happen the last time we talked?
No, I don't reckon. This is the way it has to be, I guess. Let me tell you one thing before you hang up.
All right.
This is an April Fool's joke on you bastards.
You crotchety old curmudgeon.
I always knew you were... But man, oh man.
Drew and Mike in the morning. Broadcast program. On the Riff. 101-101. Riff. Rocks. All day Thursday, your walk right in free station, 101, The Riff, unleashes a Ticket Blitz Thursday. Keep your radio locked on 101 WRIF all day this Thursday for your chance to hook up with tickets to all of the hottest concerts and events happening around the Motor City. Hooking you up like no other Detroit station can. Listen for your chance to win. Then call the Riff request line at 313-298-WRIF.
Don't forget.
You can always improve your chances to win by joining the Riff Cyber Crew today and score your totally unfair internet advantage. Just log on to WRIF.com. It's Ticket Blitz Thursday.
Thank you very much for joining me. We've been bringing back a lot of our great interview authors, haven't we? And this week is no exception. Christopher Baker was on the show at least once, or maybe I've played his interview a couple of times before, so I think he's been on more than once. We'll ask him. The last time we spoke with Christopher Baker, it was about his travel journeys through Cuba. The book was called Mi Moto Fidel, and that is Motorcycling Through Castro's Cuba. And Chris Baker has just
traveled everywhere, written travel books on any number of locations, particularly in the Caribbean. And he also has the definitive tour book on Cuba, published by Moon Books. And he's back with us, this time something near and dear to the hearts of us here in the Motor City, Detroit. It's called Cuba Classics, a celebration of vintage American automobiles. It's published by Interlink Books, and it's 200 pages of incredible vintage cars. Chris Baker, welcome back to the Peter Werby Show.
Thank you very much, Peter. It's a delight to be with you again.
Now, tell us, let's not make any assumptions. I always think that most people know that when you go to Cuba, automobile history stopped in essentially 1959 when the revolution occurred. Is that essentially true?
Well, there you go. That's the fact. It really did. The door slammed shut, and moreover, the Cuban government does not permit Cubans to buy contemporary cars. And so they've been clinging to these old relics, these wonderful old cars. And what was amazing for me during many years of traveling through Cuba is I'd be going down the road and I'd be passed by a Kaiser or a Hudson, all these wonderful cars that disappeared from the roadways of America years ago.
Now, we may be. In fact, I would look forward to repeating this interview because I'm anticipating it being as good as the last one where you chronicled your motorcycle tour through Cuba. Now, going through Cuba, getting all these photographs you told me before the before our interview over the last 10 years, and particularly in the last 3 years, we are coming up this weekend when this is being aired to something called where we bring in almost like a million people, and it's called, it's right out of my brain, the cruise. We have this Motor City Cruise, which is not, how weird, I can't think of the name of it right now, when a million people are going to be coming into our town with these same kind of automobiles that are that you chronicle. Now, is there an attempt to make these look like the way the people do here in Detroit, to keep them in vintage shape?
Well, that really is wishful thinking. These are really beasts of burden, and it doesn't matter if you're talking about an old Cadillac or a Hudson or a Studebaker. These are everyday vehicles for Cubans, and so just keeping them running is the hardest part. There is no attempt nor even any possibility of being 100% true to the original. There are no replacement parts. Most of these cars are cobbled together and held together by wire and faith. But occasionally you'll see, very infrequently, you'll see a real gem. Many of the best models have actually been bought up by foreigners living there, the embassy staff, etc.
Now, if you have a 55 Chevy Impala hardtop, you're in Detroit and you're here this Saturday for the big event, you're very self-conscious. You're very aware that you've got this car that's half a century old. Is there that self-consciousness among the Cubans?
Well, not really, because these cars are such a day-to-day element of Cuban culture. It may surprise you to learn that about one in eight cars on the road in Cuba is a pre-revolutionary vehicle, many of them dating back to the 1920s or so. It's true to say that almost in any one day, certainly outside Havana, you may see a Model T Ford chugging down the road, and it's being used. these aren't roses to be cuddled on a Sunday, brought out of the garage on a Sunday. These are working vehicles. So they're just part of daily life. They're taken for granted. In fact, Cadillacs, pre-59 Cadillacs, are the backbone of the taxi fleet throughout the nation.
Really? Now, I was going to actually say something, but I probably ought to be a little wary, and we'll talk in a minute about what kind of penalties are involved for Americans traveling to Cuba, but a friend of mine was married recently in Cuba. I was going to mention the town, but I probably won't even do that. And there were he and his bride smiling, and in back was, oh, I'm forgetting my car. It's probably like a 57 or actually they changed, like a 58 Chevy, and it was kind of dolled up with wedding kind of stuff. Are they used for special occasion? I mean, you did say they're the workhorses, but are they also recognized as a prestige item?
Yeah, there are two elements to that. One thing is that one of the wonderful things about being in Cuba is, of course, to see these cars working, passing down the road. But the best models, especially the convertibles, are hired out for, especially for weddings and for the 15th birthday celebrations of young girls, which is celebrated as their coming of age. And they're dolled up, and, you know, they'll be hired out for $20, $30, $40 or so for the day. And they're an important source of income in a nation where trying to, you know, fighting for good income is a hardship. So this is one of the great delights, especially on a Sunday.
Now, in your book, Cuba Classics, A Celebration of Vintage American Automobiles, you must have had some favorites. What ones stand out? And is it just all visual, or was it the people connected with them?
Well, the book is not just a photographic celebration of the cars. It's really a story about the part that cars play in contemporary culture. And just as you would imagine here, people, many Cubans are totally into cars and totally into maintaining their old cars to the best of their abilities. Yes, I do have some of my favorite cars, but mostly they're to do with the people associated with them and some of the anecdotes that I had. If I may tell a brief one, I was on the Seafront Boulevard at dusk, this is in Havana, and crept up upon a 1959 Oldsmobile 88, beautiful vehicle. And I was down on my haunches taking photos with the sun shining, you know, the sun really low, red upon this green and white car. I thought I'd take some photos inside, and when I stood up to take photos inside, I found a couple on the front seat. And, you know, they were kissing, and they were lovers, and they smiled at me, waved. I took a photo, and about a month later, I went back to Cuba and gifted photos to the driver. When I arrived at his home, his wife answered the door. I realized I'd been photographing him and his mistress.
Oh. Well, you know, that that actually reminds me. I was thinking there's a Bob Seger song where they're talking about, he's talking about the back seats of these cars. Well, most modern American cars, and certainly European cars, there very little can go on in either the front or the back. However, in those big behemoths of the 50s, they... In fact, I think Khrushchev called them stinky sofas on wheels. are they in, like, popular lore, the centers of amorous activity?
Well, certainly. I mean, Cuba is quite libertine in that way, and yes, they are, but mostly particularly because there is such a shortage of housing, and so, yes.
Yes, is the answer. All right, this is a family show, so we won't go any further than that. My guest is Christopher P. Baker, and he is the author of Cuba Classics from Interlink Books, just published. And you can go to cuba-automobiles.com, cuba-automobiles.com. I'll have that on my website as well. And we're talking about the cars that never, they're kind of frozen in amber after the 1959 Cuban Revolution. But there's got to be, when you said that's just American cars, so what do they have, like Russian Ladas and all those kind of clunkers that never worked real well?
Yes, those are there, and if and hopefully soon when Cuba is opened up to American travelers are going to be in for a shock, because the Mercedes are there, the modern Volvos are there, the modern Japanese automobiles are there. They've been importing cars since the revolution from Europe. Most of those cars, the vast, vast majority, of course, are owned by the Cuban government. Modern Mercedes are actually a backbone of the tourist taxi fleet. As are Peugeot and Renaults from France. But for about 20 or 30 years, of course, most of the cars that were imported between the revolution and the fall of the Soviet Union were Ladas. You know, they're all pretty much all lemons, but they are by far the most numerous vehicle in Cuba, and they're gifted out by leased out by the Cuban government to workers, to party officials, etc. But I think every Cuban secretly wishes to have a pre-1959, at least a working model. The mid-50s Chevys are really particularly sought after.
Just like here.
Yeah, they're considered the most reliable. And, of course, the Studebakers, which are so numerous, it's incredible how
really?
Studebakers are there. But they're in Cuba, they're referred to as Stude no gracias, for no thank you, because they're not considered to be the most reliable vehicle.
Do they have those? I used to have one of those low-slung Raymond Loewy design two-door ones that they began that looked like were the predecessor of those Superhawks.
Mm-hmm. They're there.
Wow. That's
You name me an American model, and I can swear it'll be there. I think the only model that I've not seen is in 1957, Cadillac made an Eldorado Brougham, There are only about 700 of them made. Wow. I've been looking for one. I can't find one.
How about Nash Ramblers, those little two-seaters?
Plenty. And the funny thing is, before I conceived doing this book, of course, I was working on another books in Cuba and photographing, and of course, I love American cars, so I was photographing these cars, but I didn't photograph any Nashes because I didn't consider them particularly an attractive vehicle. And that was the case for many other vehicles that I passed in Cuba. And it was only later when I came to research this book and began, because I'm English and I don't know my American car models, or at least didn't until researching this book. But as soon as I started to research, I realized that I'd failed to photograph some very rare vehicles in Cuba. And then I made up for it by photographing some Nashes.
Did you say, I forgot, what class of people have the older cars? Is it... dumb old me. I mean, I thought that these were like the only cars. Why I wouldn't have figured it out that there were cars from other countries is beyond me. But who has the old vintage cars? Is it the middle class or the poor or who?
Well, there's really no such thing as, you know, the middle class as such anymore. There are certainly people who are favored, such as the communist bureaucrats. But no, these cars are sprinkled throughout society. Of course, many people who did not leave after the revolution, who were middle class or upper class, they kept their cars. A lot of those cars were left behind by people who fled Cuba for Miami, and those cars were seized, and they were either seized by people who moved into Havana and just as opportunists took the vehicles, or they were taken by the Cuban government and handed out. Gifted, if you will, to various other individuals. So all walks of society.
Mm-hmm. Chris Baker, you told me before the show as well that your book Cuba Classics is just part one of a trilogy you're doing on the second one, which I think of as very Cuban. I never thought about the third, but tell us about the one about baseball.
Well, this coffee table book, which is what Cuba Classics is, will be a trilogy of very similar books that is a photographic celebration of baseball within Cuban culture. I'm just beginning work on that, just as I'm beginning work on a similar book on the dogs of Cuba, because dogs are a very important part of Cuban culture also. So I want to focus on the three things that I think Americans have an affinity for, a passion and a love for. Old cars, baseball, and dogs fits that bill, but also themes that are very important within Cuban society.
Well, of course, Cuban baseball players are legendary. In fact, Tia, maybe since you're pretty savvy on Cuba stuff, I read a novel about 3 or 4 years ago that featured the young Fidel Castro as a pitcher. Was an American down there? Does that ring any bells?
It rings a lot of bells. In fact, there's actually more of a misconception that he tried out for the Washington Senators. From my research recently, it seems that was not the case. That is not to dismiss Fidel as not having come up to par, if you will, as a baseball player. He was an exceptionally good pitcher and an extremely gifted all-round sports figure in his youth. In fact, he won the Cuban National Championship as the athlete of the year when he was about, I think, 18 or 19 or so.
Yeah, actually, in the novel I read, that figures in it, a tryout with the old Washington Senators. By the way, I just, all I got to do is wait. My mother always used to say, if anything's important, when you say you can't remember something, she says, if it was important, you'll remember. It's the Woodward Dream Cruise. Why in the world that didn't pop to my mind, since this is going to dominate for, you know, a week ahead with all these old cars. Many of which are now residing in Cuba, chronicled in the book Cuba Classics, Celebration of Vintage American Automobiles. My guest on the Peter Werbe Show, Christopher Baker, the author. Dogs?
I'll tell you how it happened. I was in Cuba for one day. I'd gone to a conference in Mexico vis-a-vis Cuba and U.S. relations. And I went into Cuba for the day and actually had an interview with Fidel. But I was with an NBC film crew during the afternoon, and we were walking through the streets of Havana, and the cameraman pointed his camera at a mutt, just a mutt lazing in the sun. And the dog looked, saw the camera, and rolled on its back and spread all four legs and hammed for the camera. I swear that the entire street roared with laughter.
Really?
And I thought back to, there's a series of very successful books on the cats of Greece. There are 10 coffee table books by photographer called Hans Sylvester on the theme of cats in Greece, and do very, very well. And at that moment, I realized that in my stock photography, I've got some very wonderful photos of dogs. And dogs are a very important part of Cuban society. I'm going back in November for the International Dog Show in Havana.
Really?
So a lot of the dogs, a lot of families, even though they're hard-pressed to put food on the table, life isn't too easy, nonetheless love their dogs, and every pedigree of dog you can imagine exists in Cuba. But the second side is that about 50% of the dogs in Cuba are street dogs, and most of those, and many of those dogs, were put out on the streets after the collapse of the Soviet Union. Particularly 1992-93 were terrible years for Cuba and the Cuban people. Malnutrition returned. It was very difficult to feed oneself. And so they put the dogs out on the street because they couldn't keep them alive. They ate the cats. Cats disappeared from the streets of Cuba, but nobody could bear to eat their dogs. So these delightful creatures are a very important part of Cuban society. Cubans love dogs and treat them very, very well.
Now, as you were saying, and we can tell by this interview, Chris, that you've been to Cuba any number of times. I loved your I'm looking at a travel book. Is that a best travel adventure, let's call it, Moto Fidel, where you traveled through this island that I remember. Let me see if I remember my lessons from reading your moon travel guide on Cuba. It's 700 miles long. How am I doing?
A little bit more, but not, you know, you're in the ballpark.
Okay, and you drove your motorcycle 5,000 miles.
Actually, 7,000 miles.
Oh, man. Yeah. Through Cuba, collecting the material for the travel book.
Exactly.
Well, you've been in the United States for, you said, about 20 years. I say every time I talk to you, your English accent diminishes more. You're going to be saying France and chance pretty soon.
Well, that's because I'm in California on the West Coast. Maybe if I were closer to England on
there
the East Coast,
go.
I wouldn't be losing it.
Now, are you an American citizen?
I am these days, yes.
So how can you go to Cuba when most other people can't?
I'm a full-time professional journalist, accredited journalist, and go for research reasons. That's basically it.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about someone like myself who does interviews like this, that does a lot of news reporting? Can I just hop on a plane and whiz it?
Actually, yes, you can. There are certain categories. There are two categories of journalists, and those who are freelancers who have a very questionable status as full-timers would certainly have to apply for what's called a specific license from the U.S. Treasury Department to go to spend money in Cuba. There's no restriction on travel per se. It's on trading.
Spending money. But as I remember from your book, I could travel under what's called a general license?
You could, because you are employed by broadcasting, an accredited broadcasting entity. So, yes, you could go under a general license. Mm. Having said that, the regulations change frequently, and I would point you to the Treasury Department, point anybody to the Treasury Department's website to look up the latest, because certainly in late June, there were some very, very significant changes came out of the Bush administration that changed the regulations as to who can go to Cuba and under what conditions.
Yeah, and they tightened it up, actually.
Very much so.
Right. Now, as it stands, people that are eight or 9 miles south of me in Windsor can just get on a plane and fly directly to Holguín, in the eastern sector of Cuba. Yet, if we're just a mile south of that, and on the Detroit side, you're subject to fines. Now, I think they've made them huge, haven't they?
Well, the fines themselves have not changed. What has changed is that there was never any prosecutions, never have been any prosecutions of anybody spending money illegally in Cuba. That has changed in that they nominated three judges to oversee the backlog of cases of people who have been accused of spending money illegally in Cuba. So that's changed, but also they are definitely beginning to, or have begun to, police more to try and identify individuals who are going to Cuba illegally. It's absolutely ridiculous, given that I think there are about 20 staff members in the U.S. Treasury Department whose job it is to try and impose these sanctions on travel to Cuba, but only three of those staffers trying to trace monies of Al-Qaeda internationally, etc. It's absolutely ludicrous, but nothing has ever been sane between U.S.-Cuba relations for four decades.
Now, I must know a minimum of 20 people that have been to Cuba, and they've never experienced, they've never had a knock on the door, never got a letter. Are they home free, or could they be in danger of getting a fine?
Well, it depends. I mean, the laws are on the books, and if one has been identified as having gone to Cuba and spent money there, there's always a possibility that, it might be 5 years ago, but the knock may come on the door. But I think the chances of that are very, very minimal indeed.
Mm-hmm. Now, you talked about when, at least indicated pretty early in our interview, that when things got back to normal, some people fear a return to normality, normalcy, I guess it is, Cuba will become sort of just like Aruba, the way some of these little enclaves for Canadian and European tourists are, that right now that Cuba has a spirit and a quality to it that could quickly be destroyed if the United States and Cuba weren't at odds.
Well, that's certainly true. If you've read me Motto Fidel, you certainly know that I have two minds as to the Cuban government. I acknowledge the wonderful things that the Castro government has done without being misled as to the fact that it's been an intensely destructive process and caused immense hardship and continues to do so for a lot of people, not least in individual freedoms. But the one thing, to take up your particular point there, the one thing that is so notable and so distinct and individual about Cuba is that the last four decades of America being held at arm's length has enabled Cuba not only to preserve a traditional culture, but also to really sponsor traditional culture. And if you go to an island close by, Puerto Rico, for example, whilst there's a lot of Puerto Rican culture still alive, nonetheless, you know very well that you're in an offshoot of America, mainland America. And I fear that very quickly that will happen. There are no McDonald's in Cuba right now. There's actually one on Guantanamo Naval Base. But there are no mainstream, there's no KFC, Walmart, etc. And that is already beginning to change as Cuban government initiates its Cuban equivalents of those entities. But really what I'm trying to say is that as soon as the embargo is lifted, and if, and that's assuming that there's a radical change in government, and that's not a given that that will happen, then there will be wholesale change because the corporations, the big corporations, see a population of 11 million people that's virginal in the sense of business opportunity.
Any sense of what Cuba would look like after Castro is gone, assuming he dies a natural death? Will communism go on, or will that be the signal for the unraveling?
Well, I
WRIF.com. Get your clubs ready and head out to Treetops Resort. Treetops, located in Gaylord, Michigan, is home to the number one par 3 course in the U.S. Treetops is proud to be rated the top golf course to play by Golf Magazine, as well as being recognized as being a silver medal award winner. Also ranked by USA Today as the top 10 places to take dad, this is certainly a place where you need to be. There are four unforgettable courses, three of them designed by top-notch golfers. So call now and make certain you're able to take in the incredible sights of Treetops Resort. Call 1-888-TREETOPS. That's 1-888-TREETOPS. Be sure to ask for the WRIF Stay and Play offer for just $99 during the month of August. That's 1-888-TREETOPS for this special price. Oh, and when you call, make sure you ask for the great prices on ski packages available for this winter. Offer subject to availability. Some restrictions apply. The $99 Stay and Play offer won't last forever, so call now. 1-888-TREETOPS.
Time is running out. Time is running out on the best deal ever. On your opportunity to make an investment that can help you make more money, that will change your life forever. Time is running out on your chance to register for Oakland Community College's fall 2004 semester. Final walk-in registration for fall classes is on August 30th and September 1st. Register on the web or visit any of OCC's five convenient campuses to sign up for your choice of thousands of day, night, and weekend classes in literally hundreds of subjects like business, psychology, computer information systems, physics, English, pre-engineering, robotics, and more. If you want to take a giant step to a better life, Oakland Community College is your educational answer. Call or visit your local OCC campus now. They're in Auburn Hills, Waterford, Farmington Hills, Royal Oak, and Southfield. Remember, final walk-in registration is August 30th and September 1st. Oakland Community College. Get anywhere from here.
Fall classes begin September 2nd.
This is WRIM.com.
Hello, how are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We talked to Gene Simmons of KISS. Of course, we had to ask about Peter and our dear friend Ace.
They're both sweethearts. Hopefully, they're taking care of their health, which is more important than being on tour in a rock band.
Well, there's just so many comical aspects to him also. Just the business of him, like that he likes to take things apart, but he rarely puts them back together again. And
kind of puts it back together. I've given him a few cell phones. You know, if they didn't, they had a click or something.
Yeah.
Let me fix it. He tears them apart. I'm going, oh, that's what the inside looks like.
Yeah.
I'm going, okay, can I have it back? It's not working.
Not a chance. Not a chance. There's no way that cell phone's going back together again.
You don't let him do that in your studio, do you?
Stop letting him do lots of stuff.
Drew and Mike in the Morning. Broadcast program. On the Riff.
Riff.
Every Tuesday, 101 WRIF,
the home of rock and roll,
brings you Tuber Tuesday. Keep it locked on the Riff all day this Tuesday for back-to-back badass blasts of your favorite Riff rock band.
Plus, the Riff gives you the hottest tickets to the coolest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Tuber Tuesday.
Double the Riff rock.
Double the Riff prizes.
Learn it. Know it. Live it.
Tuber Tuesday on the Riff. From 101 WRIF.
If it rocks.
If it really rocks.
Now, begin transmission.
Here comes the music.
You're
listening to WRIF.com.
Hello, how are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the Morning.
Mike tried to get through a review of some art house flick, House of Sand and Fog. Yeah, there's a big budget thriller. Anyway, the Peanut Gallery had a pretty short attention span for this one.
Her dad had this house. She ended up getting the house, and she never opened her mail. And eventually the city took the house from her. She's trying to get the house
boring.
Back. And they're and basically these foreigners moved in and they built a porch higher up so that you could see the water in the distance, and they called it a water.